truth is that that was my job. I was supposed to speak for Malcolm. You are supposed to speak for Malcolm. We, all of us, we are supposed to speak for Malcolm and Martin and Medgar and Mandela and Marcus Garvey. We are supposed to speak for all of them. And we betrayed them when we refused to do so. We betrayed Dr. John Henry Clark when we refused to do so. We betray ourselves when we refuse to do so. You see, I don't make a distinction between light-skinned Africans and dark-skinned Africans. I don't make a distinction between Africans with darker skin and Africans with lighter skin, Africans in America and Africans in Africa, or Africans in Britain, or Africans in the West Indies. I don't make a distinction between Africans who speak English or Swahili. I don't make a distinction between my people based on those things. I make a distinction based upon, do you believe in black first? That is the distinction that I make. Do you subscribe to black empowerment? That is the distinction that I make. You see, this broadcast talks about these things seriously, and that is why this broadcast has never done the things that other people have done as quickly as they did, because you see, those other people were willing to sit down and entertain you. This is a place that has never sought to entertain you. It has only sought to enlighten. It's only sought to recruit. It has never attempted to entertain, ever. I still believe in those words. Brothers and sisters, I still believe in a man named Malcolm X. I still believe in a man named Elhaj Malik El-Shabazz. I still believe in the Black Panthers. I still believe in the dream of Marcus Garvey. I still believe in a place called Africa, where all good things come from. I still believe in that place. That is why Malcolm did what he did. And that is why I do what I do today. A lot of other people are not prepared to tell you, and you don't hear them say this when you listen to their broadcasts. Brothers and sisters, I believe in this. I am willing to lay down my life for this. Brother Khalid Muhammad said it so well. He said, let me live my life. And if I cannot live my life, then let me give my life. My people's resurrection, rebirth, and rise. And I am willing to lay down my life for this. Because I watched those men as they stared down unbelievable odds. And it would be betraying everything I know is true if I was not willing to do the same. Who is going to speak for the icons today? That's you. Because the reason that Malcolm's life mattered was because he was trying to galvanize a nation of Zulus who would one day rise up. Dr. King said he was waiting for America to rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. Malcolm was waiting for a people who would rise up, toss off the chains of the oppressor from their minds, and live and fight and die for their liberation. And I'm here to tell you today that I'm going to make that stand. I may be the only one who is willing to make that, but I'm going to make it. And if it wasn't for a man like Malcolm X, if it wasn't for men like him to show me that example, then I probably wouldn't know how to do it today. But they showed how to do it. They've shown us the example. Stop asking, what do I need to do? Stop asking, how do I do it? You've already seen it. And your fear is telling you, well, aren't you worried about your life? Your life is worthless. Your life is worthless because you've lived it as a crawling dog and a coward. You've lived it hiding in the shadows. You've lived it accepting being the lapdog of white supremacy. Your life is worthless. Your life needs to be spit on. Because you wake up every day and you accept that situation. You wake up every day being made the buffoon. You wake up every day knowing that somebody is better than you. And you've let their boots stay on your neck. That's why your life is worthless. Your life isn't going to gain value and meaning until you start doing what's necessary to be free men again. Because your life without freedom? Who the hell needs life? I'm going to go ahead and open up the phone lines now, and I want to know who's going to speak for the icons. You call us up at 646-787-1933. 646-787-1933 is the phone number to the blackchannel.net radio, and I'm inviting you all to call us tonight and join us tonight. Particularly if you're younger people, this will definitely be something that you want to speak with us about. Caller from 661, you're on live with the Black Channel.
Hello? Yeah, this is
okay,
Robert.
We have
once again
a caller on the line, 661. Let me see. Okay, 661, hold on just a moment here. Let me see if I can get that line changed over. Yeah, that's an issue there. No wonder he's not being heard. All right. Need to make sure we keep those things straight there. Okay, 661, now they'll be able to hear you. You're on live with the Black Channel.
Yeah. How's it doing, Black Authority? You know, I'm sitting here and I'm listening to you talk about saying that, you know, the black youth of today are different than the black youth of the 90s. Saying that we're wayward and all this and that. And in my opinion, I don't think there's any difference between the black youth of today or 1993 or of any other time. I mean,
I don't think I said there was a difference.
What is it that you expect black youth to be doing?
I don't remember saying that there was a difference. I didn't say there was a difference. I don't remember saying there was a difference at all. Did somebody hear me? Did anybody in the chat room hear me say that the youth of today are different than we were back then? Does anybody remember me using the word different? I don't remember using the word different. I think I used the word wayward, listless, But then again, there's a reason for that. But I don't think I said the word different. Maybe I missed something, but I don't remember saying the word different.
Well, basically, that's basically what you're saying. You're saying that, well, in the 90s,
no, I
you're saying,
say
well, in the...
I don't say basically things. I either say things or I don't say things. I will say anything I want to, and I will back it up. So if I mean that they're different from we were back then, I would say that they were different. I'm saying that they were wayward and listless, but, I mean, I don't basically say things, because what you're doing at that point is you're trying to twist something on somebody. I'm not going to twist your words, but I'm going to ask that you not do mine. Now, if you had a misinterpretation or whatever, I can help you get that cleared up, but I don't basically say things, because either I said it or I didn't say it. If you can't quote me as saying it, then I didn't say it.
Okay, well, did you say that the youth in the 90s, that they were doing things or behaving in a way that we're just not doing today? Is that something, is that what you said?
Okay, well, I think I said something a little bit different from that. Before we go any further here, what is your name and where are you calling from?
This is Robert from Cali.
Robert from California. California has been really thrilling us for the last 2 weeks, too, by the way.
Yeah, well basically...
There's a difference in social conditions, was what I was referring to. There was a difference in societal conditions. It wasn't so much that the youth today are different. Young people are young people. The youth today are wayward and listless. Now, what I did say, if you had been listening, and apparently you weren't, but I'll give you a second chance to actually listen this time. What I did say was that the youth of today are wayward and listless. And the reason for that is because they don't have the proper example set forward for them like we had for us. At least we had something resembling an example. We had music that was in our interest, music that served our interest. We had popular media that served our interest a lot more than this mess we got going on right now. So the children today are wayward and listless because they have been led astray.
Okay, so you would agree that Tupac Shakur and Ice Cube and Eazy-E back in the 90s, they provided a more positive message in the music than today.
No, I think I named a group of people. I did not name any of those three people that you named. But that's what I mean right there is that you stop talking, Robert. Stop talking. At some point, you need to be quiet and just listen. You said enough already. You named off Eazy-E, Ice Cube, and Tupac. At that, you just named off the founders of Coon Rap, and you're still trying to talk. You see, those guys were given to all of you. They were promoted to all of you by white corporations because X-Clan did not get any type of corporate sponsorship. They didn't get any major corporation that wanted to sign them. Queen Latifah didn't really have their corporate help either. Public Enemy did not have it either. One of their videos was directed by Spike Lee when he was first starting out. They didn't have any help from the major corporations. Eazy-E got into bed with Jerry Heller. Jerry Heller had been a longtime music promoter. And with the white folks, he had a longtime music promoter, and that was who Eazy-E got into bed with, but look what they had to talk about. NWA was not talking about black empowerment. They did talk about resistance. F the police, that was a good start, but you got what you got from NWA and Tupac is you got vomit mixed in with the water. I've given you a glass of water, but it has vomit mixed into it. Now, if you want to say that that water is still palatable or that, well, it's useful because there is water in the glass, yeah, but there's vomit in the glass too. That's what you're doing if you try to subscribe that Ice Cube and Tupac were helpful. You all, how old are you, Robert?
22.
You're 22 years old.
Yeah.
Okay, 22 years old, 15 years younger than me. Now, that means that you were what, you were in elementary school, middle school, when Tupac was doing his thing? You all don't remember Tupac. All you all have seen are memes of Tupac. You all know Tupac the same way that I know Marvin Gaye. You all don't know Tupac. You all don't know anything about Tupac and Digital Underground. Y'all don't know anything about that. All you know are the YouTube videos and the memes that were put up online. You know nothing about him. Nothing. You don't know anything about Tupac Shakur. Nothing at all. Have you ever even heard his album, Tupacalypse? Most of you didn't.
No.
That's right. Most of you young folk only know his Death Row music. The albums that he made on Death Row, All Eyes on Me and all that mess. That's all you all know. When the white corporations got a hold of him and told him, okay, time to crank out some coon rap. That's all you all know of Tupac Shakur. You don't know anything before Death Row. Nothing. Nothing at all. And that's why you're citing him now. That mess he was talking about on Death Row, that was garbage. That wasn't anything useful. But wasn't he saying some conscious things in there? Okay, if you like your conscious... It's like somebody preaching the Bible during a porno flick. That's what that was doing. Tupac Shakur was trying to teach the Bible and putting the Bible verses inside of a porn video. That's what he was doing. In other words, he was negating the effectiveness of his own message, because here you all are today and all y'all know about Tupac is Thug Life and a few verses from a few songs, but you all are not living the verses from his songs that have any sense to them. You all are living that hit me, I hit them up, and all that mess. You're not living the intelligent things, because he mixed it with garbage, because that was what his corporate masters told him to do, to dilute the message. Now, what you need to remember is that those are the same tactics that they used with Malcolm. You see, they did not promote Malcolm X's speeches. Malcolm X's speeches were never promoted. Never. Malcolm X was a pariah in black society, in white society, and black society in large. So why is it that when Malcolm died, right after he died, I mean, the man wasn't in the ground 5 minutes, but they made Malcolm X's autobiography required reading at so many colleges and universities? Why is it that you hated him in life, but as soon as he died, Ivy League universities made the autobiography of Malcolm X required reading? Why did they do that? They did that because in their minds, they saw a way of showing a schism in black society. And whenever they whenever the white media and white society elevates a black man, understand they have ulterior motives for doing it. When they elevated Muhammad Ali, wait a minute, you all didn't elevate him when he was beating the hell out of white men. Why is it that after he's got brain damage, all of a sudden he's Ali the champ, the hero? Why? Because he's not able to make speeches today like he used to. He's not able to talk today like he used to. In other words, now he's safe. They didn't lionize Jim Brown when he was in the NFL talking about racism. They didn't lionize him. Who did they lionize? They lionized Walter Payton. They lionized O.J. Simpson. We all know how he felt about racism and white supremacy, don't we, O.J.? They elevate people who will destroy us from the inside. But as young people, you all don't have that. What about Ice Cube? Ice Cube was on point with the militancy thing. That was what those black men were on point about, was militants and resisting white society. But they mixed that in with gangster culture. Gangster culture is never going to be able to beat white supremacy. Why? Because gangster culture is the product of white supremacy, and there isn't going to be any type of reformulation or trick photography that you can play with gangster culture that transforms gangsters into soldiers, which has always been what they tried to do. They tried to say the guys in prison were soldiers. These were not soldiers, and they're not soldiers now. They're thugs, they're gangsters, but they're not soldiers. They cannot help us because everything with them, what did they popularize when NWA came out? It's all about self. Do for self. Go for self. It's all about self. So much for we as a people. Martin said that we as a people will get to the promised land. I may not make it with you, but we as a people will get there. And when Ice Cube and NWA were done with us, we as a people were gone. It was self. All about self. Go for self. But you're telling me that there was something useful in there. I'm telling you that you have been tricked and bamboozled by jingles and memes. And you've had Tupac parceled out and spoon-fed to you and had people sit up here and take a quote here and a quote there and tell you that something miraculous happened. And it did not. Tupac was not Public Enemy. Ice Cube was not Boogie Down Productions. Eazy-E wasn't even a rapper, but I'll just leave that where it is. Tupac was not X-Clan by any twisting, manipulation, or contortion of the imagination. There was nothing useful in there. And what few scraps of useful thought you could dig up, he destroyed the value of it by packaging it with garbage. And maybe he thought to himself that you all would be able to separate the two. Take a look at the bastard baby rate. Take a look at the poverty rate of black men bowing to white supremacy and black women worshiping at the altar of white women through scandal. The final returns on the election of the efficacy of Tupac's music is in. Take a look at Eminem. The fact that he can even make an album is proof that Tupac can do nothing.
Okay, well, with that being said, well, what's the plan? Well, in my opinion, I think a good plan to combat that would be a black, owned and controlled by black men media company.
Okay.
I mean, if we want to control how we're portrayed, and control how how we're seen, then we need to do that ourselves. We need to get in control of our own image ourselves with our own media companies.
Okay. Now, what's your plan to do that?
What's my plan?
Yeah, my this phone is very clear. You don't have to peep me. What's your plan?
Well, my plan is, I'm still young. I'm not in that field myself, and more than likely am never going to be in that field since I plan on studying law one day. But I would think that the plan would be for brothers such as Tariq Nasheed, who have already made movies portraying, our history, in a positive light and in a factual light. Brothers like him, getting together and going ahead and creating something like that. We already have TV1 in my which is owned and controlled by which was created by a black woman. And in my opinion, there needs to be more black-owned television stations in order to control our own media. I mean, in order to combat the fact that a lot of these mainstream musicians, mainstream rappers, and R&B artists, their lyrics are, for the most part, tailored by corporate America. I mean, they're tailored for the commercial masses in order for them, to portray a certain product and to make money off of that product. They're not portrayed necessarily there with black interest in mind. So I think a black-owned media corporation, that'd be a good step in towards combating that.
Okay, I have a couple of questions here then. You said you're 22 years old.
Yeah.
Okay. Why is it? Because you said, well, I may go for law school. Well, what are you doing now then?
In school.
Well, and yeah, in school life, period. I mean, you're 22 years old. So if you say that we have a media issue here, I'm trying to figure out, okay, what effort are you putting into things right now? Because that's what I'm trying to find out here. Instead of us belaboring problems, I want to know who's bringing a solution. So I'm asking you, what are you doing?
Well, I mean, what do you want me to do? I mean, I'm not an actor. You know, you want me to try to go get in
movies? Well, no, I'm not saying that. I'm asking you, what are you doing in life right now? Because you said, well, maybe I'll be a lawyer one day. Okay, I'm trying to find out here.
The best thing for me to do right now is to go ahead and study and go ahead and, you know, get what I need to get. So
yeah, I understand that. I got that part. You're not understanding me. Stop talking. You're not understanding me here. I'll try this again. We got too much weed floating around out there in California, y'all. Way too much. Listen to me, young man. I asked you, what are you doing right now? Not, well, I plan on, or I mean to, or next year, next decade, I might. I'm asking you, what are you doing right now as far as a job, school? What are you doing in life right now?
All right. Right now, I help. I work for a family member in somewhat of a business that he has going, some kind of merchandising business. And on top of that, I study.
I don't know what study means. What does that mean?
Studying, going to school. I mean, what else is there to say?
Going to school. You say, I'm going to school. Okay, you're 22, so are you going to high school?
No, I'm going to college.
You're going to college. What are you majoring in?
Oh, well, I'm majoring in business, but I'm also trying to break into real estate so I can go ahead and get some money in my pocket behind that. Okay. And then once I get some of that money, then I'll... Huh?
How long have you been in school?
A long time, man, since 17.
Okay, you mean you've been in college since you were 17? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, I've been in school since 17.
Okay, are you saying that you have been in college since you were 17 years old?
Yeah.
So you've been in college for 5 years now?
Yep.
Okay, how many degrees do you have?
Zero.
You've been in college
for 5 years.
You've been in college for
You've
been in college for half a decade, and you still do not have a degree.
Yeah.
Okay. Have you been by our website, 7ammovie.com?
No, but I've heard of it.
You need to go by our website. We're making a documentary that specifically deals with socioeconomics in black society and why we are the poorest people in the world. And it's going to be a really major work, and you definitely want, since you do have a job, that means you have income, you just got paid, this will be a good time for you to actually start contributing.
Okay.
I'll let you have the last word.
Well, the last word for me is I just think that there needs to be some kind of, how should I say it? You know what, just forget it. I'm going to go ahead and let you go, Black Authority. You know, I appreciate you allowing me to come on your show and express all my thoughts. Black first.
Black first, brother. You all take care out there. Brothers and sisters, all I have to say is California, California, California. Y'all, I say y'all because I'm from Louisiana. Y'all, what is going on out there in California? We got real serious problems in California. Oh, and where were Dre and NWA from, by the way? Caller from 240, you're on live with the Black Channel.
Hello. Good evening. This is Gwendolyn from Fort Meade.
Hello, Gwendolyn from Fort Meade. And what's on your mind tonight?
Well, I'm listening in, and I just really don't have any comments on anything I've heard yet. I don't know much about the Tupac and the rap game and gangster rap and everything like that. But I was calling. 28.
Okay. I'll probably get back into that in just a little bit here, because there's a little bit more information that you all, especially those of you who are younger, because at 28, what that means is you're 10 years younger than me, which means that when I was in high school, you were in elementary school, is what that means. So with that being the case, you know, it's a situation where, I mean, because I would have been 17, 18, you would have been 7, 8, 9 years old. So you would have been in elementary school. And, of course, you all were not listening to those guys when they were out there. So, but I want you to do, Gwen, because I know why you called, because I had to. I want you to just stay on the line for me, okay?
All right.
Okay, I want you to just stay on the line. And definitely I'll come back to that here in just a few moments. Well, I'll come back to that here in just a little bit, because I want to make sure. I don't want to lose your call, because I do want to talk with you, because you did do what I asked you to. Hope this doesn't fry too many brain cells with some of these folk out here, though. I'm going to go ahead and put you back on hold here, though, but I will come back to your call so that we can go ahead and finish up about that. Let's see if we can go ahead and try another phone call here. Caller from 813, you're on live with the Black Channel.
Black First, Black First, how you doing?
Black First, brother, what's your name? Where are you calling from?
It's Jason calling from Raleigh.
What's on your mind, brother? You can hear. Now, you and I are around the same age. I mean, you're 41.
Yes.
And you and I remember what was going on back then. Because we're not talking about we didn't get introduced to Tupac from a Facebook meme. We knew Tupac before he even hit the rap game. You and I remember when Ice-T was wearing leather and chain and breaking and being the electric rapper.
We
all remember that. See, he wasn't a gangster. He didn't have Darlene and her draws on the Power album just yet. It was all about discos and breakdancing for him. And then he reinvented himself as a West Coast gangster. And then Tupac followed the exact same model, because it worked for Ice-T. So you see, I guess people will forget that you were in ballet school. I'm not dissing Tupac. Everybody knows by now. Everybody knows about, you know, he's had formal dance training. Well, he had formal dance training. Everybody remembers that. I'm not dissing him for it. I'm just saying, if the truth is the truth. But these young people today have gotten Tupac as a T-shirt and a meme. They don't know what was going on at the time. They don't remember Tupac and I Get Around. If I talk about I Get Around, they're like, what? What was that? If I show them Tupac in that video, most of these young folk today will be like, man, you trying to diss Tupac, man. Why are you bringing that up? I didn't know nothing about that. Why are you bringing this up? Because you don't know the truth about him. Or go take a look at Tupac Insane Song by Digital Underground.
Mm-hmm.
See, I'm giving y'all a playlist tonight. And Jason, tell me if I'm wrong, if I'm lying about anything I'm saying. Go take a look at him dressed in a dashiki with the African colors on in I Get Around. Go look up, Same Song by Digital Underground. The group is Digital Underground. The name of the song is Same Song. And you will see Tupac in there. And you will see the way he's dressed. He's dressed like X-Clan. He's dressed like he is straight out of Africa. I mean, literally. And he sits up and says, I clown around when I hang around with the underground. That's the first thing he says. Wasn't no thug life. Wasn't no gangstered up. You all have never met Tupac Shakur. You don't know him. and the corporations fed you a cartoon caricature of a black male with a bandana around his head and Thug Life tattooed across his abdomen. They gave you a SpongeBob SquarePants cartoon cardboard cutout and told you that that was a black man. But you don't know Tupac Shakur.
No, they don't. No, they don't.
What's on your mind?
Well, the thing is that a lot of these younger folks think that they know Tupac, and they don't. And a lot of these rappers, it's kind of like, I want everybody to think about, and I don't really too much particularly like to talk about Jay-Z, but Jay-Z dissed Mobb Deep because one of them used to take dance classes as well. A lot of these rappers that were coming up in the 90s used to go to school, okay, and they used to go be dancers and all that other stuff. Okay, that's why when they do their diss records, they expose them. But Tupac...
Yeah, but look what they expose them about, though. Let me back up for a second here. Look what they expose them about.
Yeah.
So it's a diss to say that you've been to school. It's a diss to say that you're cultured.
Mm-hmm.
You acting white. And the Jay-Z makes most of his money off of who, by the way?
The white people.
That's a little game that they play. Lil Wayne, I don't know if he ever actually got his degree. I do know that he went to school for a bachelor's and was damn near there 8 years ago. Did Lil Wayne ever get his degree? Can somebody tell me, did Lil Wayne, because he was going to school for like, was it, I forget what it was. It was criminal justice or something. And he had almost gotten it, but somebody can tell us whether or not Lil Wayne actually ever got that degree. But he was in college to get his bachelor's. I mean, same thing with Plies.
Mm-hmm.
Ice Cube. I mean, a lot of these guys, they had to have a real life, so a lot of them were going to college and stuff, and they saw that they could perform better. Nicki Minaj. These were performers that corporations got a hold of and said, here, I want you to perform this. Yeah, but I'm supposed to be a rapper. Well, treat it like being an actor instead. We're giving you a character and a script. Treat it like that instead. And that is what Nicki Minaj is doing.
That's why the rap game is not her real name, though.
She is performing the character of a their name, Nicki Minaj.
Right. It's something I wanted to bring up because a lot of people don't understand. They never listen to Boogie Down Productions or KRS-One. Okay, and I guarantee you a lot of folks were exposed to KRS-One if they watched Hidden Colors 2. They were like, who is this guy? Okay? But if you go back and you listen, because I always keep going back and listening to Self-Destruction, it is not like we were so self-conscious back in the 90s, actually the mid to late 80s and 90s, especially when the gangster rap took over, because a lot of folks were dying in the streets listening to this gangster rap and living that thug lifestyle. They made a song about self-destruction. It was a whole group of folks that got together and did that, okay? And that went, and nobody talks about that. Nobody talks about that. The other thing that you brought up when you said it was the white society looked at it as a fad, it was a fad, okay? It was a fad. We remember when MTV came about, and they were talking about they were not going to play any black artists on any of those. You remember The Box? That was the only time you could watch any hip-hop was on The Box.
Now, brothers and sisters, now he just stepped on a major one here. Now, I was going to get to that in a moment, but for those of you who do not know, the reason that Digital Underground, Jay-Z and Puff Daddy, the reason that Tupac, and really to be totally honest with you, Death Row, there used to be a channel. Now down here in Shreveport, it came on UHF, and the signal was pretty weak, by the way. It was static on the screen. The signal was really weak, but it started out being called the Jukebox, and then they changed the name to The Box. Naughty by Nature, a lot of these, Queen Latifah, De La Soul, they all got boosted because Box, because radio wouldn't play them. NWA, because of The Box, radio wouldn't play them. And the radio stations that started playing stuff used Box basically as their farm team, the same way that Major League Baseball used the Negro Leagues as their farm team. And then later, major music labels would use BET as their farm team. that if you were popular on BET, then you were one to watch for MTV and so on. And that was the box. Understand, Tupac got his start because of the box. The way that the box worked was different than this corporate crap you got out here right now. The way that the box worked was that you could watch, if you would pay, at the time it was like $1.50. But if you paid $1.50, you called this phone number, you paid $1.50, it would charge it to your phone bill, and it would play the video. But here was the catch with the way that the box worked. And you remember this. The box did not want to be taken over by corporate interests. The box wanted to broadcast in service to music fans. So the rule of the box was that you could order a video, and you could order as many videos as you wanted, but you could not order videos back to back. Their system would not allow videos to play back to back. So you see, Jerry Heller could not call up and spend $100 and have the box playing We Want Easy for 12 hours. That was the wonderful thing. At first we all were like, why would you do that? But now I understand that was the wonderful thing about the box. It would not allow corporations to saturate it. And it was wonderful because a lot of rappers who otherwise would never have been known because MTV and VH1 weren't going to play you could get their videos played. They could get their played on TV. And that was a beautiful, wonderful thing. And that's why the corporations now want to crack down on net neutrality, because Kendrick Lamar built himself. Young men today are able to build themselves without the major corporations, and that's why they want to crack down on it now. So they don't know what the box was. They don't know, well, how did you all have all these rappers back then? It was because we didn't have the internet, but our ears were super sharp back then. Mm-hmm. And we had to pay for everything we got. There wasn't no download music. We had to pay for it, so we weren't going to pay for something we didn't like. You all got a bunch of crap today, and you're paying for stuff that's garbage. Because that's what the corporation gave you. But the box was a major, major, major outlet. And I don't even know if it's still out there. We lost a lot when that went by the wayside in popularity. We lost a lot because the corporations took over. They took over, and intelligent, sensible rappers getting a start, man, it's just too hard for them in a lot of cases nowadays if they are not if they're not internet savvy. If you're like my first caller and you're waiting for somebody to bring it to you, you're not going to get very far. But that was a major catalyst that Jason just mentioned to all of you. Especially you young folk, you can go look it up. It was called the Jukebox, but it was the box, and it would just be screen after screen. The screens would change. It'd take like 10, 15 minutes for them to get through all the songs that they had available. But it would be a screen that would just list songs with a 3-digit code to the side. And just like with your pay-per-views, that was basically the way it worked. It was like pay-per-view, only it was charged to your phone bill. You call up, put in the 3-digit code, it would pay your video, it would charge it to your phone bill. And that was how we came up. That was one of the ways we came up back then. And the corporations couldn't stop us. And we could actually talk about what we wanted to talk about. Instead, now Negroes are chasing Maybachs that they can't get. They're chasing Lamborghinis that they can't get. And they're chasing houses, and the girls are chasing Gucci bags that they can't get. I'm sorry to interrupt you there, brother, but you've been stepping on so many major points, and they don't know what it was like back then. They didn't have what we had.
No, that's fine. No problem. Along with that, a lot of folks, if you're listening, go back and listen to Public Enemy. Like, really listen to Public Enemy. X-Clan was oh, my goodness. Yes, talking about rocking with a medallion. I mean, you were right. That was black empowerment, okay? That was them stamping, screaming, black first, you know? And then what really kind of – this is how people need to think about how and why gangster rap came out of nowhere and was so ferocious with it, because the corporations pumped money into it. It was destroying the positive information that groups like X-Clan and Public Enemy were pushing, you know, they were literally trying to choke them out, okay? Okay, then the corporations went ahead and fed money, just like Jason was telling you, that Tupac used to be a dancer. Okay, he went to a performing arts school. Okay, then he switched his persona to be this gangster rapper. And if you notice, okay, Death Row Records, which basically came out of nowhere, okay, got all this money from the corporations. And what did they do? They started an East Coast, West Coast beef, okay, which, oh, by the way, okay, the white corporations pumped money into that until you ended up getting people getting shot and killed over it, okay? Now, we're at this situation now where anybody that has any conscious sort of rap that wants or hip-hop that they want to talk about gets no airplay, and you guys know this. You guys know this. Everything that you hear nowadays is straight garbage and trash, and you don't want to hear. And what's crazy is that PBS had a documentary a few years back. I can't remember the name of it, but they had a documentary a few years back when they talked about the rap industry and how it changed. And they talked to a lot of these rappers, and a lot of these rappers were college educated, and they'll tell you, oh, I can talk about some conscious stuff. It's just that they're not going to pay me. They don't want to hear that. They don't want to hear that. You guys, I'll give you another example. People like to joke about movies, but watch the movie Brown Sugar with what's his name in there. That whole thing with the white dude and the black dude in the rap group, and they didn't want to talk to Mos Def because they want to pump money into him. That's real. There's a lot of brothers out there that are very conscious, brothers and sisters as well. You know this. They don't really talk about female rappers because Jason and I know Queen Latifah, or Dana as we used to call her back then, okay, the Dana that you see now is not the Dana that we grew up with, okay?
Absolutely
she literally
not.
Has sold us out. She absolutely sold us out.
She was together with Moni Love, and she was together with MC Light back then. MC Light was running around with the Egyptian hieroglyphs and dressed up like Cleopatra and whatnot because she wanted to. Because that was when we started establishing for ourselves that the Egyptians were black. They were not white. They were black. They were not Arab. They were black. And that was what we were on back then. But they don't want to see a resurgence of that. So you're right. The females they give us are Foxy Brown, Nicki Minaj,
Lil Kim,
Rihanna. That's what they give you now. But back then, you could not have beaten a black woman and got her to do that. When they tried Hoes with Attitude, that fell flat on its face because the Queen Latifah came out telling the women, ladies first, it's about getting respect. You and ITY is about respect. And the female said, yes, it's about respect. Today, it's about showing my ass on Facebook. Can I get some attention? See, she didn't have to attention whore and show her ass. Neither did Moni Love, by the way. Neither did Boss, by the way. Neither did Boss. I understand there was some sexuality issues there, and I get that. But my point is, that wasn't what they had to do as women. They didn't have to show any cleavage or nothing. These were women who wanted to be respected for in the game like the men were respected. And the men were respected for their microphone skills. Because back then, the standard was EPMD, Rakim, Big Daddy Kane, Sir Mix-a-Lot, the DOC, who, in my opinion, that's probably, if that's not the best rap album ever, no one can do it better. It's number two if it's not number one.
But a lot of people don't listen to that.
There isn't an album that Tupac put out that could ever touch No One Can Do It Better. And it's a shame what happened with Tracy, by the way, because he basically got caught up in the rise of gangster rap, and we gonna smoke some weed and drink some drink, and it didn't cost. I can truthfully say that Tracy Curry was Tupac before Tupac was Tupac.
Mm-hmm.
And the DOC, who is still alive today, by the way, but he was robbed of his ability. And do you know what happened that night, Jason?
No, I can't recall what happened. I think I can't remember.
For those of you who don't remember, the DOC, he made his first album. I mean, because a little bit of history, for those of you who don't remember. When NWA first came out, they had, you know how Negroes do. We always got this thing where everybody we know on the block going to be in the studio with us, which I think is a bad idea if they don't have any talent, but that's just me. NWA actually had six members, if you remember. Take a look at the cover of Straight Outta Compton. You see there's six people. Now, I know that on the 100 Miles and Running song, Dre said we started with five, but come on, Dre, you started with six, Arabian Prince. But there was also another one. That was Tracy Curry, the DC. And he came out of Texas. But he was so talented and so undeniable that he made his way out to California, and NWA was like, Dre was like, I got to stick with this guy. Well, Arabian Prince left, and then NWA was such a hit, they focused on Tracy next. They were like, we're going to make a – they basically went, like, from the Chronic to Dub Style. Well, that was what happened with Straight Outta Compton to No One Can Do It Better. We're getting Ruthless Records off the ground. And DOC is the man who is going to show that we're not just a one-hit wonder. We have a stable of talent. We have the best talent out there, and we got a stable of them. And DOC was the one whose job it was to prove. So that's why they didn't want him so close to NWA anymore, because they wanted to prove that we got more than just NWA. And No One Can Do It Better, as we all know, monster hits. If y'all haven't heard the formula, that it made iconic. Plain and simple, iconic. That was Dre at his... If you want to know why Dre was an icon in his early years, he became an icon. Just listen to Mind Blowing and The Formula. And The Formula, period. If y'all, as those of you who are young people, get your asses to YouTube after the broadcast and go look up the DOC, The Formula. Nobody in rap music since this time has been able to touch the quality of that song as it is, period, end of discussion. I don't give a damn what you say. But in any case, Tracy made some money. He was a young man, 19 years old. 19. The kid who just got off the phone, you 22. Dude, these fellas were 17 and 19. MC Ren was 17 years old when he got with NWA. Same thing with Cube. These were young fellas, teenagers, like the Panthers. The average age of a Black Panther was 17 years old. These were young men. Don't you know white society saw the fire next time coming? They were like, damn, we were looking for the Panthers, but this is the fire next time. And if y'all don't know Baldwin, go look it up. What happened that night, though, was that Tracy was in his car. I think it was in some Nissan sports car, I think it was.
Yeah.
And he had gotten drunk, and he had been smoking weed, because that's what they was doing with all that money they had. And he was flying down the freeway. Now, here's the real tragedy of it. He was flying down the freeway, and he actually got pulled over by a cop. He got pulled over. But the police officer recognized him. He recognized who he was. This is Tracy saying that. He recognized who he was, and he said that the cop let him go with a warning and said, you need to slow down. And Tracy said, thank you, sir, and pulled off. And 3 or 4 miles down the road, that was when he hit. And they think his car flipped over 4 or 5 times. And he injured his throat. And it punctured his voice box. And that was the beginning of what happened to the DOC. The next thing is Jerry Heller tells the rest of the story. That Jerry Heller said that we were going to rehabilitate DOC. And we had speech therapists working with him and rehab working with him. And what they told him was that you need to stop with the smoking and the drinking, because you are damaging your vocal cords, and they're never going to heal if you keep doing this. And the magazine interview that he gave in XXL, when he said, but I felt like, at the time, I felt like those were the only friends in the world I had, was my weed and my drinking. And Jerry Heller was like, hey, I got my big trophy wife. I don't have to sit here with this. I got Ruthless Records, so, hey, you do you, black fella. I got other things. And Dre and the rest of them, we all know what Dre did. They did 100 Miles and Running, and Dre was out. not a lot of people were there to try to hang with him heavy like that. So for those of you who do not know, that is what happened to the DOC. And it's a shame because he's still alive today, but what good is a rapper who does not have a voice? I mean, he tried to put out a few more albums after that, but his voice is so raspy and garbled that it's nothing like it was. I mean, if you all really want a shock to the system, just go look up the formula and then go look up anything after the No One Can Do It Better album. He had put out an album called Helter Skelter. He put out another album after that. So you can go look him up if you want to. But that was what happened to the DOC. And it's a shame because, as you pointed out, that push of that gangster lifestyle and stuff, and these fellas were not gangsters. That's the crazy part about it. These guys were not gangsters. They knew gangsters in the hood, but none of them were gangsters. Ice Cube wasn't no gangster. Dre wasn't. No. These guys never had an arrest record. They started getting arrest records after they started trying to do, you know, like Ernest Hemingway and live out this fantasy, but they started getting arrest records later. They did not. These were law-abiding citizens. And that's the real shame of it. I'm sorry I keep cutting you off, brother, but this trip down memory lane, these young people do not know these things at all. Tonight is the first time, like the first caller who called in, he had never heard anybody talk about the truth about Tupac before. He didn't know any of this. He doesn't know about I Get Around. He doesn't know about Tupacalypse. Damn sure don't know about Digital Underground. If I did say Digital Underground, he's going to say, who? He does not know that Tupac was not with Digital Underground for a second. He was with them for years. They don't know anything about that. All they know is Tupac, Thug Life, Death Row. That is it. They don't know anything beyond that.
That and Screaming Out Machiavelli.
They have rewritten history. White society has done what they have done for 5,000 years. They have rewritten our history. And they've created a Tupac Shakur who did not exist. Never existed, never was real. But these kids think he was.
And I agree with you when you say that he basically rapped Bible verses in pornography, essentially. You know, I think a lot of folks jump up and down, or especially black men, especially when I see black men run around and get tattoos, only God can judge me. Why? Because you saw Tupac say that? Okay. You guys quoting Tupac, but everything that you're quoting is a lie, you know. Everything that you guys are quoting is a lie. You know you're quoting an actor because he was essentially an actor. That man was never like that, okay? He was never like that. A lot of these guys were not like that. That's why they can step away from the game that they used to play. Go look at Ice Cube, okay? And he's making Are We There Yet? And he's cooning with Kevin Hart, okay? Those guys were never that thug. They were never that thuggish. They were never that hard. That's why the transition is easy for them. Same thing with Ice-T, okay? He made Cop Killer and then turns around and plays a cop on television. When will you young folks realize that the idols that you look at and the lifestyle that they quote-unquote were portraying was just a fraud? It was an act. It was an act. These people didn't live that life. Now, some of these guys that are trying to do it now, okay, maybe they have lived that life. I don't know. Okay, but what they're quoting and what they think they're listening to, okay, folks like me and Jason, our age group, we know, oh, that dude was never like that. Come on now. He was never like that. Stop playing. We know who you really were. You just kind of shocked the world with what you were saying. Probably was in L.A. and you heard about stories of what was going on. And I guess that's probably what makes Kendrick Lamar so unique is because he never sat there and proclaimed to be a gangster, but he told you about what was going on out there, okay? The stuff that's still going on out there. But a lot of folks don't realize that these guys that was talking about gangster rap back then, they were not gangsters. They were actors, okay? All the movies and stuff, they were pumping, they were trying to literally get you away from the X-Clan and the Public Enemy movement. That's what they were doing. By saying, hey, look at this shiny new toy. It's called gangster rap. Listen to him cussing. Listen to him talking about drinking and smoking weed and firing guns and being misogynistic to women. That's what changed the whole conversation for us. We started glorifying that. Then they hit you with movies with Boys in the Hood, Menace to Society, okay, Juice, and all these other movies, okay, to sit here and make you get away from what you was, you know, that conscious black stuff that we're talking about, that black empowerment stuff, to sit here and make you look at this lifestyle. And we were a lot, a very, you know, they were pumping money into that. You have to understand that they were pumping money into that. I think that we were, I had a discussion the other day with someone, and we were talking about what happened to the movies that we used to have. There were movies that they had where they had black families doing positive things. There were movies like that, coming-of-age movies. Sounds corny. The first movie that comes to mind somewhat is The Inkwell. What the hell happened to that? And I was like, y'all forget about that. Trailer Ranch wasn't always, what's his name, in Menace to Society. He was in the movie called The Inkwell with Jada Pinkett. It was a coming-of-age movie, okay? And his father was there with him, talking to him about growing up being a man, okay? We had movies like that. You can't even, you know, you can't even find that. You can find any trash you want where we're portrayed as gangsters, slanging dope, growing up in the hood. You can find that on, you can get it on Netflix. You can get it on demand. You can get it anywhere. I tell you right now, if you could pull up Netflix right now and tell me if you can find the Inkwell to watch on demand, you can't. You won't be able to. Any positive movie that shows us in a good light, you can't find that. Okay, and it's a good thing that you know that you brought this up because you know on Malcolm X Day, especially on his birthday, today is his birthday, and we looking back at this, we that was to me that will always be the golden age of hip hop when we had that. You know, we were talking about wearing the black medallions. We were serious. We stood as a unit. We were trying to stand as a unit, and that scared the dominant society because they really tried to. They really was like they tried to play it off as a fad. When they realized it wasn't a fad, they said, okay, how can we change this into our favor? And once you had the gangster rap come out, they started pumping money into it. And I know Ice Cube is sold out, but go back and listen to No Vaseline. He basically tells you, yeah, you let a Jew break up the crew, okay? You let a Jew break up the crew. They threw money at him, and then they sold out. And this is what everybody else is doing. The corporations come in. We'll give you a fat contract. You're going to get plenty of time. You're going to get plenty of women. You're going to get a lot of money. We ain't going to make you wealthy. You ain't going to control nothing, but here's a lot of money. Keep slanging that garbage that you're slanging out there now. Go ahead and put that out, and your children are listening to it. They pump money into the radio stations to keep playing it, okay? I used to talk to one of the radio hosts down there in Tampa when I was in Tampa. And he played this really garbage song one day, and I called in. I was like, really, dude, did you really just play that? And he was like, you know, Jay, I know, I got to, you know, they told us you got to play. I was like, really? Really? I think it was, what is it, that Chicken Noodle Soup song. He played that, and I was like, really, dude, did y'all just play that? And he was like, oh, yeah, you know, we got to play that. Yeah, you know, corporation told us we got to play that. And I'm like, then why would you tell people if they – Why do you ask people to call in and say if they should continue to play? You know the corporation is paying you guys to play that. So why would you give people a false sense that they control the radio stations? They don't. But we keep buying into it. I would surmise to everybody that, you know, if you really want to listen, talk to these young folks, tell them to go back and listen to Public Enemy. Like, go back and listen to Fear of a Black Planet. Listen to it. Like, closely listen to it. Put headphones on. Sit there while they're rocking around, running around with beats on. Put your headphones on and listen to it. I'm pretty sure a lot of these folks have Spotify or Google Play or whatever streaming music program. Go back and listen to those albums and listen to what they're saying. Go listen to X-Clan. X-Clan will open your mind and blow your mind wide open. Go back and listen to Digital Underground and see Tupac for who he really was. You'll see the contradiction. The man had contradictions within his lyrics. He was never like that.
Well, part of the problem, though, is that we have abdicated our responsibilities. We have not taken it upon ourselves, even as older black men, we haven't taken it upon ourselves to make sure that these young people know what's going on. We haven't done that. We have not made it our responsibility to pass that knowledge and information down to them. We haven't done that. And that's our mistake because we left it up to the white corporations to teach these kids, and They did what they've done for thousands of years. They rewrote our history. And what did they do? They wrote us out of it. They wrote intelligent black society out of it. They rewrote the history and removed us. And they've told you that, yeah, Tupac was a real bright guy. Man, he was real conscious. Man, he has some really great stuff to say. But the problem is you have to climb over all that garbage to go find a few diamonds in the rough. And these young people's minds cannot filter like that. And that's the point. So you can take a look at the females saying only God can judge me, but it's never for banging on the beast. They never say that only God can judge me for rejecting white supremacy. They never say that only – they're the most religious damn females you ever met in your life. Only God can judge me. Only God can judge me. They never say that only God can judge me for rejecting white supremacy. They are more whitewashed in the head than any generation of black women before them. But they quote Tupac to justify bowing at the altar of white supremacy through single motherhood, through feminism, through coonery and buffoonery, through whoring yourself. That's when they quote Tupac, and that tells you what side of the programming they subscribe to. There is no way around it. I'll let you have the last word, brother.
Well, first of all, congratulations to everyone that that invested in 7 a.m., because I would call it an investment. If you're listening, if you have not contributed, your investment will still be definitely. You still got time to invest. Please do. I've done it a couple times, more than once. So I'm looking forward to that. But like I said, happy birthday, Malcolm X. And Jason, keep doing what you're doing. And hi, Gwen. Don't be mad at me on Facebook, but Black First, brother.
Black First, brother. Thank you very much for joining us here tonight. And everybody who's on the line, 682-310 and everybody else here, just stay put here. We are going to definitely make sure we get to you here tonight. Let me grab caller from 718. You're on live with Black Channel.
Black First, this is Big Zo. How you doing, Master Black?
Big Zo out of New York. What's on your mind, brother?
I was pleasantly surprised by the tenor that tonight's broadcast took. I was also saddened to see you have a great grasp of music history, sir. And the aspect that you took from it was surprising but very, very well received. One of the problems that we have is that, as you spoke about it, is people have not reached – those of us that know better have not reached down to those that don't have a clue and bridged the gap. And one of the aspects that people don't even realize from the great Tupac Shakur is that he was wise, and he was able to read his audience, read his community, or the neighborhoods around him, and he adapted his intellect as well his message and his motive, and he also knew what time it was all around him. One of the things that I was explaining to some of my coworkers, because we had a down day last week, I sat down and explained what happened to the community, and it was a four and a half hour discussion, and when I was done, they were like, man, I had no idea, you know, blah, blah, blah. How do you figure this all out? And I said, everything you've heard me say, you can research it, go online right now. And we have computers all around. They started doing the Google searches, started doing the Wikipedia. And I said, even look at your music. You'll notice there's a difference between the music of the 80s, the music of the 90s, and then everything after 92, 94, especially with the advent of the Tupac and Biggie War. And when they started seeing, I said, if you look at what was happening in the streets, Tupac Shakur, when he was the whole while through, he was, as they would say, a sensitive thug. The changes in his life were reflected in his music. In the beginning, his music was playful, nice, sensitive, even revolutionary. The further along he got, with the more trouble and the more stuff that happened to him, it started to get dark and started to get grim. He had his jail stint, even the one that he nearly died from, and he started pushing hard in the studio. And even now, there's more and more music coming out, and it has more of a tender or more reflective, more of an insightful anthem instead of the foolishness and the garbage that most people gravitate towards. And even within the garbage, there were subliminals, and there were messages within the message. And before he died, his whole thing was he came out with a code for the thugs, the lower aspects of black society, because not everybody can adhere to the message of of those that have been raised in a so-called traditional two-parent household. And everything within those 26 commandments of the thug life code, it was designed to protect those that are not about that street life, even those that are in the street life, and then to focus on black empowerment. Even in his debauchery, he was about black empowerment.
Okay, but the problem is that Tupac was not about black empowerment. If you've got one foot in white supremacy and another foot claiming to be about black empowerment, brother, either you're in or you're out. It's like saying I'm faithful to my wife when I'm not cheating on her. That's what that's like saying. I'm faithful to black empowerment when I'm not empowering white supremacy. When you are giving voice and giving fuel to our sins and our problems and our dysfunctions, you are doing the work of white supremacy. And the problem is they've tried to pass off this sleight of hand that you can do both, that you can help us and damn us simultaneously, and you cannot. You will either help us or you will damn us. If you're not helping us, you are damning us. So there was nothing. The problem is I don't believe in subliminals. And we can take a look out here on the street and we can see there weren't whatever code he thought he was giving was being drowned out by everything else. His belly said thug life. Imagine if it had said black life. His belly said thug life. That has nothing to do with being black. That's just degenerate. Imagine if he had stuck by the code and said black life. Just imagine how different things would be. But he wasn't going to do that. And he wasn't going to do that because he did not have faith in it. That was not what he was. That persona that was out there, that was not what he was. But he did not have faith in himself to be what he was.
True.
And that was the problem. The problem is that we can't, what you said about, you can't take somebody who hasn't come from a family home and imbue these values in them. Yes, you can. Because I can take somebody who came from a two-family home and turn them into a ratchet. What makes you think I can't take a ratchet and turn them into a responsible black citizen? That door swings both ways. But we have put so much more effort and so much more power and so much more fuel behind degenerating people instead of demanding that they stick to a code of discipline that empowers us. The problem is that we keep looking at the lowest common denominator and seeing how we can lower the temperature so that they will feel comfortable stepping up to us. Hell no. Make it hot as hell. Give it to them straight. No chaser. Make it hot as hell. And require them to step up to where we are. We're not coming down there to you. Gods don't get down in the gutter. God stay in the heavens and require you to climb Jacob's ladder. We're not going to get rid of Jacob's ladder because your mama was a crackhead, a crack fiend mama. We're not going to get rid of Jacob's ladder because your mama was a hoe. We're not going to get rid of Jacob's ladder because your daddy was a psycho. We're not going to get rid of Jacob's ladder because you had a tough upbringing. I expect you to use that difficult upbringing that you had as the steel that has forged you to be able to climb Jacob's ladder with no problems. I'm not going to get rid of that ladder so that we can all descend into the gutter, because you're already in the gutter. You need to get out of it. And I am betraying you when I make you feel comfortable staying there one second longer than you are. And that is why I say bastard baby maker, and I will not compromise. I won't compromise because they want me to make them feel good about where they're at instead of doing what the Bible so rightly said and convict them of their sins. And Tupac was not concerned with convicting you of your sins anymore. And that's when he totally crossed over to the dark side and began doing the work of white supremacy full time, and they loved him for it. No, brother, there was no code there. The code was completely droned out by the demons. There was no code anymore. All you had was a whorehouse that claimed that there were, and some of the rooms of the whorehouse had scriptures on the wall. But you don't go to a whorehouse to get scriptures. You go to a whorehouse to get whores. So we are either going to have a church or we're going to have a whorehouse. What's it going to be? Because if I want to run a whorehouse, I'm not going to be up there with a man railing with a choir singing, "Don't go to whores, don't go to whores, don't go to whores." I'm trying to get this whorehouse popped off. I'm trying to get this whole house sparked off. So I'm, no, y'all got to stop with all that singing and preaching, because this man is just yelling too much about don't do whores. Don't you see I ain't brought no whores over there? Wait a minute. Some of my hoes talking about I got saved. No, you ain't. You got to work tonight, 8:30. You got to work tonight, and this man's up saving you. Oh, no, no. We got to get out of here. We got to go. We got to go. We got to go. Well, guess what? It works both ways. I cannot offer you salvation in a whorehouse. If I am, I have to be uncompromising and relentless about it. Tupac was neither uncompromising nor relentless. I hit him up. There ain't nothing. There is nothing redeemable about I hit him up. Nothing. Nothing. Nothing at all. You got to get yours. I got to get mine. I live a thug life, baby. I'm hopeless. Finger on the trigger trying to keep my focus. There's nothing redeeming about that. Nothing. I'm not here to spit on the dead, brother, but I'm just saying, let's not sit up here and try to put whipped cream on garbage. Let's not try to do that. There was nothing redeemable there. There was nothing redeemable. This sleight of hand and this mental jujitsu that we try to pull off, that, well, you see, there was something redeeming lyrics there that they got drowned out. It's like when you're making Kool-Aid and they tell you, what, take half a gallon of water. Tupac was the equivalent of dumping 50 gallons of water and then adding one packet of Kool-Aid and a cup of sugar and saying, okay, I've made Kool-Aid. No, you haven't. You put Kool-Aid in a swimming pool. But it's still a swimming pool. You did not turn the swimming pool into Kool-Aid. We can't. This is not Kool-Aid. You thrown some stuff in with the Kool-Aid, and we in with the water in our swimming pool, but this is still a swimming pool. That was the goal, was to water down the message to the point that it has no efficacy. And so that people will argue and fight over whether or not this is garbage or not. But you notice when you turn on Scandal, ain't no admixture to that. When you turn on 24, there's no admixture to that. When you looked at 300, there was no admixture to that. That white supremacy lets you know, ain't no good black folk in 300. This is a white supremacist production. They didn't play no mental jujitsu with you. There was no argument about who was empowered from 300. None. You see, when they do it, they make sure there's no argument. We do it, and we want to argue about it. Brother, there wasn't nothing there. Either he brought the straight truth, or he did not, and he did not. You need to go back and go listen to X-Clan. Do yourself a favor and do that. Go listen to Rakim. Go listen to Rakim. Go listen, especially his album, Follow the Leader. That was when he really started getting it kicked off. Go listen to Follow the Leader.
I got it.
As a matter of fact, the song Follow the Leader, for all y'all young folk out there, Eminem, please kiss my ass, people. Please, give me a damn break. Y'all should be ashamed to even mention his name, by the way. You should be ashamed. That shows you how brainwashed and lackey you are when you all bow to Eminem. Get the hell out of here. You go listen to Rakim Follow the Leader. There's not a rap. Rakim is the greatest of all time. Plain and simple. Eminem wishes he could be Rakim. He wakes up in the middle of the night wanting to cut his hair into a high into a fade because he wishes he could be Rakim. Most of your rappers today were inspired by him. They wished they could be him. And take a look at the way he took those lyrics. He wielded them like a saber. He wielded it like a katana. Chopping heads everywhere. You could not touch the man. Now, go listen to Rakim, and then go ahead and turn on your radio and see if you can listen to T.I. I don't see how you can listen to Rakim and then go back to listening to Lil Wayne or Lil Jon and the East Side Boys. I don't see how you do it. You have to be pretty dumbed down to make that leap, to make it across that chasm. I don't see how you get there. But, brother, if they're not doing it like that, if they're not doing it like Boogie Down, if they're not doing it like X-Clan, they have watered down the formula. And that's what the bad guys want you to do. Keep watering it down until people have to go looking for the message. I have to go sifting through the music for a message. People ain't going to sift through it. It's either there or it's not. And we need to give it to them straight, no chaser. Because white supremacy is giving them debauchery, straight, no chaser. I'll let you have the last word, brother.
More than 20 years later, the message and the music of Public Enemy still reigns strong, strains pure, and they're still able to tour and make money and to have a supportive clans, a sport, supportive network of fans worldwide. Kumo D, Intelligent Rap Music, 25th anniversary of the album Knowledge is King. Rakim, you've already known it. And those are the musics. Those are the musics that I've grown up about, and those resonate within me. In the 80s and the 90s, we had shows on television, Different World, Cosby Show, The Rock, and other shows where black people were actually doing things, living positive lives in the face of a lot of ugliness going on in communities around the country. And we look at ourselves here. The question is, we have to decide who we want to be and how we're going to live. And having said that, my people, choose the light, choose the right, even if it means you'll stand alone. Black first.
Black first, brother. That was very, very good there. I can't say that any better. Wow, I feel like wrapping up the broadcast now after he said that. Caller from 682, you're on live with the Black Channel.
Black first.
What's your name? Where are you calling from?
It's Brandon from Texas.
What's on your mind, brother?
I had to call and chime in regards with the rap music today because it is very hectic out here today. And I myself, I do rap, and it's positive. And I used to do, you know, the music that the watered down type stuff. The coonery and buffoonery, I used to do that type of stuff myself. And I didn't know I was doing it, you know, consciously. I didn't know. I just, because that's all I knew. And then a year or two ago when I changed it and I saw it performing at shows and, you know, to some of the same crowds that I used to do, and the people, they didn't like it no more. They walked away from it.
Okay, brother. Now, we've got daycare going on back there behind you or something. I'm not sure what's going on, but
yeah.
Some
yes, sir. My
behind
wife
you, so.
Just dropped the kids. Yeah, the wife dropped the kids off and left. So
okay,
let
well,
me go to the garage here. So, yeah, but pretty much, you know, Rakim, I grew up on him. You know, KRS-One, Public Enemy. I was a youngster watching them box. My granny had it, and I watched it. I didn't ever get to call him and request anything, but that's where I found a lot of the people, you know, that I looked up to and listened to. And I just, like I said, I was a young kid on the block, knew all the songs and grew up. And when I heard Eazy-E and NWA and them, that took me for a whole other turn, because I was asking about stuff I didn't need to ask about. I was learning terms I didn't need to know about. And so today is just, I'm not sure what everybody's doing. I mean, I know what they're doing. They're listening to the same old garbage.
Now, that's very good that you just asked there. I wonder if everybody caught what you just said. Once NWA came out, I was asking about things I shouldn't have been asking about.
Right.
Understand something, brothers and sisters, because Too Short came out before NWA, don't get me wrong. But Too Short was really a real, real deep underground thing. I mean, Too Short was not really known like that. Yeah, he was known nationally, even though you couldn't play him on the radio or nothing, but Too Short was not really known like that. It was NWA that popularized hoes and bees. It was NWA that did that. NWA was were the ones who put that terminology on the international map. Too Short probably did it first more than anybody else, but it was NWA that took it to a whole new level. NWA was to Too Short what Ronald Reagan was to Barry Goldwater. Goldwater ran and lost on the conservative platform. Ronald Reagan ran and won and changed the landscape, so much so that the right-wingers and white society has been trying to replicate him ever since and still can't do it. But that was what NWA did. And what you say about I was asking things I never should have been asking, you were asking about money, hoes, and clothes. Why? Because White Ice Cube told you life ain't nothing but bees and money.
Right. What was the eight ball? What was the eight ball?
What was he, 17, 18 years old? 17, 18 years old, talking about life ain't nothing but hoes and money.
Yeah, that was, like, I was asking about all kind of stuff. Like, they passed me the 8 ball and just, you know, what's a Mac 10 and a 12 gauge. And, I mean, I'm not knowing anything about what this is. And when I get older and I went back and I was listening to it, I'm like, I was really reciting all this stuff to the T. I mean, I knew every song at a young age.
Most of us did.
They gave
us a handbook. What they did was, Chancellor Williams gave you a book on the destruction of black civilization. And what those albums did was those albums gave you the handbook of the destruction of black society, the destruction of the black mind, the destruction of the black neighborhood, the destruction of the black spirit. That was what those albums were. Those albums were a handbook on how do you destroy the black community and the black society. How do you do it? And we were already in serious trouble before then. Rap music was a major influence to help turn that thing around, and then they turned our asset into a liability. That
correct.
Was and what you said about they had us asking things we never should have been asking. You grew up in a two-parent household, and yet you're asking folk about 40 ounces and, you know, dank and, you know, getting lifted and chasing hoes and sex acts and all this stuff. So your high school girls are getting turned out in 10th grade, 9th grade, and now they're getting turned out in 6th and 7th grade. I mean, this is what's going on now. That those albums were a handbook of black degeneracy. If you didn't know how to be a degenerate, those albums would take you step by step through the process.
Sure did. Sure did. I listened to a lot of that stuff and tried to emulate a lot of the stuff. I mean, I was able to, you know, stray past any pitfalls due to some of the stuff. But like I say, today, since I've made my change, and I found intelligent, and I find myself, you know, saying and actually spitting intelligent rap. Like I say, my peers, they look at it sideways. Now they're like, hold on, what are you talking about? Like, okay, yeah, it's good, but it's not this. You know, it's not talking about the streets. It's not talking about selling drugs or, you know, it's not what we want to hear. So it's kind of a thing where it kind of baffled me to where I'm like, okay, I'm giving y'all good information, but no one wants to hear about it. Like I said, I don't care to sign a deal. Like I said, I want to keep myself out independent. I don't care to do anything with any corporate person, because I know if they hear what I'm talking about, they wouldn't want to push. And like I said, I wouldn't want them to push you anyway. I want to push you myself. And like I said, I want to send it to you so you can check it out for yourself and see what you think about it. But the rap industry today is all the way watered down. You know, everyone's using auto-tune, talking about the same trap house, talking about the same female ratchets is out there. Just it's the same thing. And I went to a few nightclubs and I just listened to what the words is being said, and it kind of hurts me in the inside. I'm just listening to what our people actually get turned up about. You know, the words is being said. I'm like, this is what, you know, all my people is actually getting up in the row about in the nightclub versus, you know, even, you know, to myself saying what I'm talking about. And, like, these are my peers, but they excited about with Lil Wayne, with Jeezy, or, you know, any of the other, you know, mainstream rappers we're talking about.
Well, the situation has been dumbed down so much now that, I mean, it's been a 20-year jihad against black intelligence in rap music, and that means it's going to be, we're going to need a couple of decades to dig ourselves out of this hole. That's what it's going to require. We're going to need a couple of decades to dig ourselves out of this hole.
Right. Right.
I'll let you have the last word, brother.
Black first. Let's keep doing it. I need to visit 7 a.m. For the third time at the end of the week. I'll be there once again, and I encourage everyone else to do the same. Black first.
Black first, brother. As always, thank you very much for joining us here tonight. And as far as 7 a.m. is concerned, brothers and sisters, it's been a tremendous effort so far. I want to thank everybody who has participated, everybody who has contributed, everybody who has heeded the call to get involved. This is going to a movement like nothing we have seen since the days of Malcolm and Marcus, and it is going to fundamentally change the national conversation. It's going to fundamentally change it. Because now it's time for us to start dealing with serious issues and answer serious questions. It's time for us to do that. And 7 a.m. is the vehicle that is going to help kickstart that conversation. If you have not been, go to our website, 7ammovie.com. It is the most important documentary in history because this is the first documentary that tells your story. The story of why we are the poorest people in the United States and what we need to do about it. We're going to be talking to luminaries and the most enlightened minds on the subject. We're speaking to Shalimar Blakely. We're speaking to Morris Levin. We're speaking to Dr. Umar Johnson. We're speaking to Claude Anderson. We're speaking to Brett Pulley. We're speaking to Alayla Bundles, the great-great-granddaughter of Madam C.J. Walker. We're speaking to Don Peebles of the People's Corporation. We are currently in the midst of preparing for television advertising in the largest markets in America. Talking about a few ad buys on a couple of local stations. Not anymore. At first, that's what we were looking about. That's what we were looking at before. But it's not that anymore. Brothers and sisters, we are talking about taking this nationwide now. Buying ad time in the biggest markets in America. They are not going to be able to ignore us. Not this time, they won't. Baldwin talked about the fire next time. The fire next time is back again. And this time is going to be like nothing you've seen. So while other documentaries are out there and other people have galvanized the internet, we are taking this, we are blowing out the computer screens. We are blowing out of your keyboards. And we are taking this to television. We're going to see about some radio. We're going to see about whatever we can do. But this message needs to be out there. And it needs to be in front of the people nationally. But we need you for you to join in to help bolster our efforts. So go to our website, 7ammovie.com. In the middle of the screen, you'll see where it says click here to get involved. Go to our Indiegogo. We still have a few weeks left. There is still time for you to contribute or contribute. Begin. Become a producer with the project. I want to put your name up there so people can see it. I want to put your name out there so that people know that you were involved. I want you to make your stamp on history. Don't be like your parents and have to lie to your children about what you did when our backs were to the wall. Because they're going to ask you, what did you do when Barack Obama forsaked us and forgot about us? What did you do when teen pregnancy was on the march and white supremacy was rampaging? What did you do? Don't be like them. Be better. Don't sit back watching to see who makes a difference. Get in there. Get in the game and make a difference. Get involved. Life is not a spectator sport, and black empowerment is not for window shoppers. Involved. Do something that you can be proud of, something that you can be proud about, because it's been a long time since you could do that. It's been doing well, but it can do better. Think about what we could do with $100,000. Think about that. Did you know with that kind of money that we could start looking at the process of saturating markets at that point? Think about that. Think about us being able to have a commercial for 7 a.m. running 5-6 times a day on the largest television stations in New York, D.C., Baltimore, Atlanta, Dallas, Houston, L.A. Think about that. Think about what that would be like, that they don't have to hear about the Black Channel, and they don't have to come to the Black Channel to hear that. They don't have to find the Black Authority on YouTube. That we will give them a way of seeing it right next to Oprah and Scandal. That's right. Time for us to start mixing some intelligence. It's time to start balancing it out. So come and see our project. Let us continue the work of Dr. John Henry Clark. Continue the work of Chancellor Williams. Continue the work of Dr. Joseph Benyakinon. Continue the work of Malcolm X and Huey Newton and the Panthers, to continue the legacy of Marcus Garvey and to honor the sacrifices of Denmark Beese and Nat Turner and Harriet Tubman and Sojourner Truth and all the others. It's about business, brothers and sisters. It is about empowerment. Join the movement. 7ammovie.com. Make your mark. Become a producer. Get involved. Make sure your name is on this. Let everybody know when you declared Empowerment Day. Not just Independence Day. Empowerment Day. Call from 310. You're on live with the Black Channel.
Well, good evening. And first thing I want to say is Black First. Jason, I thank you for what you're doing. My name is Anthony. I'm calling from Los Angeles, California. I'm 50 years old, and I'm a third-generation native. I've been listening to you now for about 6 months, and I'm going to tell you I'm mad as hell. And it's a couple of your shows made me so mad to where I was going to go to work and go in the break room and play the shows. Just let these white people and these Jews know how mad I am. But to the caller earlier that had called here from California, you asked what's going on in California. Well, I'm going to tell you what's going on. What's going on is what you've been preaching. Black people are now persona non grata in California. I live in Los Angeles. They no longer hire black people to even work at McDonald's. Our neighborhoods now have been regentrificated. The ghetto houses now are $400,000 a month. A two-bedroom raggedy apartment is $1,350 a month. And all the ethnicities, the blacks, the whites, the Jews, the Asians. Now, when I said blacks, I mean even the black people hate the black people out here now. And it's just like you said, these other ethnic groups, they do not want to integrate with us at all. And one of the biggest ploys that we have going on here now in L.A. is we have these Jewish attorneys that are running commercials around 11 a.m. and 1 p.m. trying to get young brothers to come and sign up for SSI. And the young brothers are falling for it. I'm talking to brothers that's 19, 20 years old that are telling me, hey, man, I'm approved for my SSI. It's $950 a month. And the first thing I ask them is, you're telling me you're selling out for $950 a month? In the back of their mind, they think that, well, hey, you know, they may get some Section 8 to go with it, and they can live off of it. But the way it works out here with the low income, the good areas for the low-income housing goes to the white folks and the white Mexicans. The black folks only get low-income housing on Skid Row. So, you know, I want to thank you for what you're doing. I hear you ask every caller, what are you going to do? I'm trying to put my plan together to decide what I'm going to do. It looks like I'm going to have to end up leaving Los Angeles. The only reason really why I'm staying here now is I got a so-so job. My parents are 70. My grandparents are 90. If it wasn't for that, I mean, I would be gone. But I just want to say one thing. Things that start out here in Los Angeles spread across the whole country. Now, we have over 250 50 different ethnic groups here in the city of Los Angeles, and almost all of them despise black people. And as far as the rap scene is concerned out here, now, I'm a little bit older than you, Jason. In 1979, why I like you so much is, in 1979, when the crack cocaine took over South L.A., I was preaching what you were preaching, and the dope dealers were all calling me a square. Now, the crack cocaine epidemic took off here in L.A. when Richard Pryor got burned up, and people start asking, well, how did Richard get burned up? He was freebasing, and they said what freebasing was, and it was illustrated to them on how to make watts. That's when the crack took off. The crack babies here in Los Angeles are now 30 years old, and I can't talk to them. Most of them have never even seen Malcolm X's movie. They know nothing about the civil rights era. Now, you hit it on the head. My father, born 1943, he preached that. Get a job, work in a plant, live this so-called phony American dream. That was a bunch of hogwash. We no longer have no more black-owned businesses here in Los Angeles. We used to have them, but the kids smoked them off in the early 80s. So, you know, I've been listening to you, and you hit it right on the head. You said you're not going to be able to save everybody. And I'm trying to come up with what kind of a percentage. I'm saying to myself, well, Jason got it right. What kind of percentage is he going to be able to save? Is he going to be able to save 1%? Is he going to be able to save 2%? Or is he just going to be able to save himself? And I'm just praying and hoping that what has happened to black people out here in California does not spread across the nation. Now, I've been following Claude Anderson for many years. Our people don't know anything about these young people. They don't know anything about Black Wall Street. I try to tell them about all the black businesses that we had in the early 70s and the mid-70s and the 60s out here. And what's so hard for your 30-something and below is if they can't visualize something, you know, they just don't believe it. So I got a question for you. Now, I'm out here trying to, you know, promote 7 a.m., telling coworkers and things like that. What advice, or if I should even try, what can I give, what kind of advice can I give to the young black people and the black people my age? I call them homogenized black people. All I hear from the black people out here is, oh, well, not all the white people is bad, not all the Jewish people is bad, not all the Mexican people is bad. You turn on the news the next day. Last week we just had an incident in East L.A. We got black families living in what used to be a predominantly black project. They firebombed all four of their units. So what I want to know is there any advice you can give me to try to inspire these people? Because I'm constantly telling these people, if you ain't mad, you don't know what's going on. But the thing is about living here in L.A., in the back of their mind, you can stop a person who's just living out on the streets. In the back of their mind, they're hoping they're going to hit the lotto. You know, they're hoping they're going to make it in Hollywood. I remember talking to a homeless guy, Junior, was running the first time the day before Election Day. I said, tell me, man, who is it you're going to vote for tomorrow? And he voted. He said, I'm voting for Bush. I said, well, why are you voting for Bush? He said, because if I hit the lotto, the tax code's already in place, and I'll be set. So, I mean, what kind of – can you say something to these people here, the ones that are listening in L.A., to inspire them to try to get some fire under them and to try to get them to understand the biggest problem I have out here with the black people is I keep telling them over and over again, these other races of people do not like you. They do not want to integrate with you. They're waiting for you to leave to take their spot, and they just can't see it. So is there any advice?
Okay. Well, first of all, let me say on the record here officially, as I've said many times before, I actually admire the Jewish model. I think the Jewish people have set the blueprint and the prototype for how you deal with a white supremacist system, more so than the Italians and the Irish did. They showed how you deal with a system, a social economic system that tries to victimize you. So let me just start off the top with that. I don't have a problem with Jewish lawyers, Jewish professors, Jewish newscasters, Jewish corporations. I don't have a problem with that at all. They are operating in their best interests. I don't have a problem with them operating in their best interests. I have a problem with the fact that we as black people are supposed to be operating in our best interests. I could not set up a black law firm and get Jewish people to show up for me to exploit them. I don't care how much money I put into that. That is not a failure of income. That is a failure of your mama thought she had better things to do than raise her children. Values are not a result of income. Values are a result of parenting. And black folk checked out a long time ago from wanting to raise their kids. As you said, they wanted to get on crack. In the 60s, they wanted to burn their bras and make their drawers a public utility because they thought that white women were doing. Black men wanted to be Superfly and Shaft. And now they want to be rappers and ball players. They want to do everything except be adults. So I'm not going to demonize another group of people because they're working and grinding and being adults, and black people are trying to abandon their responsibility to be adults. I can't take issue with that. I can't take any issue with that at all. As far as young folk are concerned, understand something, brother. I have success speaking to young people for one reason and one reason only, because when they ask me questions, I have real answers. I don't give a bunch of bull jive. You see, the reason that fakers and frauds don't have the respect of the young people is because when you talk to them, you realize they're pretty good at stealing and getting something for themselves. They're not very good at telling you, okay, explain to me, how do I get something for myself? See, that's what hustlers and con artists do. They talk a good game, but they cannot tell someone else how to do what they've done. When they talk to me, I can explain to them exactly how to do what I've done. But too many of you are out there trying to act like preachers. You are bringing an ideology, but you are not bringing a methodology. You're telling them how to think, but you're not telling them what to do. The problem. And they will be able to tell in the first 5 seconds of you talking whether you're just stalling and running off at the mouth or whether you have a real answer. When a young person calls me up and says, what do? I tell them it's about power, wealth, and influence. I want more females. It's about power, wealth, and influence. I want more respect in the community. It's about power, wealth, and influence. Your answer to everything is power, wealth, and influence, because that's how you're going to do it. You get power, wealth, and influence, and everything else comes from that. You are trying to figure out, how do I get the best life has to offer without power, wealth, and influence? That's like saying, how do I get my car to run without gasoline? Stop trying to avoid the simple fact that you need gas. Get some gas so we can roll this damn thing. So when those young people come to you and talk to you, you need to tell them it's about power, wealth, and influence. And when they ask you about that, you are immediately supposed to let them know that it's about owning your own business, not working for someone else. How much income have you generated on your own for yourself? And slanging a few rocks does not count. How much income have you generated by yourself? And then they're going to start asking you questions about that. And how you respond to those next questions about, well, how do I build a business? That is going to determine whether they listen to you or not. Now, that does not mean everybody's going to listen to you. Let's not be childish, but we're not here for everybody. We are here for, as the Bible says, whosoever will. Everybody else, leave them to their fate. But the ones who will listen, they are not going to listen to you if you cannot give them a real answer to those questions. You have to be prepared. Don't come to them with ideology and the Jews this and the white folk this and the Asians that. You need to come to them. It's not about what Jews are doing. It's about what black folk are doing. It's not about what Italians and Asians are doing. It's about what black folk are doing. Be prepared to tell them what they need to do. They already know their enemies are out there. Now we need to actually give an answer about what they are supposed to be doing. Because too often we don't actually have any answer at all. We've come to them with ideology, and that ain't going to cut it no more. No more ideology. It's time for straight methodology. Tell them how to start their own business.
Well, you know
and
what?
Tell them
that,
why they need it.
And you know what? I have changed my tune since I've been listening to you, and that's what I've been trying to tell a lot of these people, how important it is to start their own business. But, I mean, in a place like Los Angeles, I mean, what kind of businesses for people like myself and young people, what should we be trying to start? Now, when the crack was king, you know, the few guys who made money off of that.
Well, we're kind of limited on time here, but let me just go ahead and answer your question. California mm-hmm. only specializes in two things, entertainment and technologies. And black folk in California, pretty good about entertainment, absolutely suck at mastering technologies. Oh, wait a minute, I forgot. We're the people who say reading, writing, and counting is for white folk. Well, I guess figured out why we haven't done much in technology. So black males are going to college, community college, for we don't know what, business administration. What does that mean? That doesn't actually mean anything. But they say, I'm going to college for business administration. You should be going to college for computer science, but you're not going for computer science. Why not? Because you can't count. And you didn't pay any attention in math class because your mama told you that counting was for white folk. And the careers and the opportunities that can be derived from computer science is you're completely computer illiterate. And thus you are technology illiterate. We should have scores and scores of black programmers in California, but you don't. Everybody wants to be a ball player or a rapper, and there's no opportunities for that. So that is the problem. But here's where you can come in. You can set up an organism that will give them that.
Okay.
How much do you know? Now, here's what I'm talking about right here. Now, you're 50 years old. You need to learn about this stuff. How much do you know about computer animation?
Not very much.
Okay. Let me give everybody here a crash course as a person who's dealt with this, okay? Now, back in the old days, you did animation with pen and paper. Pencil and paper, and then they went over it in ink, and then you put it on acetate and so you can put the cells together. Okay. Today, it's all done on computers. Makes life a whole lot easier. You get a digital drawing tablet similar to the checkout. The little checkout computer at Walmart when you swipe your card through it and you, like, draw your name on there. Well, they've got drawing tablets that work like that, basically. So you can draw either on the screen or on a little gray pad, and you can see it on your monitor. Now, one of those tablets will run you anywhere from $500 to $1,000. As far as computer animation is concerned, there are two ways you can do computer animation. You can do simple computer animation, which is on one computer, or you can do more complex computer animation, but you will need a render farm. Well, what's a render farm? To explain it simply, every frame of a computer animation for something like Transformers or Pirates of the Caribbean or Toy Story has to be what they call rendered. The original wireframe is done in black and white, but to put the colors, the lighting, the textures, the movements, all those elements have to be rendered frame by frame by frame. So the computer has to do all these mathematical flip-flops to fill in the colors and stuff. And to give you all an example, on Transformers Dark of the Moon, a Devastator, which was the big dog-like robot that rips open the pyramid, Devastator at ILM, and ILM has 3,000 computers for rendering, although they may be up to 6,000 now. One frame of animation for Devastator, one frame takes 72 hours to render. 72 hours to render one frame of animation for the Devastator in Dark of the Moon. And for some of the stuff they're doing now, I mean, you know, it takes like 24 hours to render one frame. So now you can see why they have so many computers, because each computer will be dedicated to rendering one frame at a time. And they can get thousands of computers so that they can crank out frames quicker. But I say all that to tell you that you don't need thousands of computers unless you're going to do something like Transformers. You can get the young men to learn a program like Blender in just a couple of months, and they can start doing their own thing. Help them set up. You can set up a studio with a render farm. It'll cost you a few thousand dollars. You won't need computers with monitors. You just need the computers with the processing units. That's all you need. The processing unit, the power supply, and maybe a hard drive. And that's all you need. The processors, you just need the tower itself. You don't even need the monitors. All those computers will be doing is crunching numbers. Now, I just gave you one example. Just one. Just one. Now, I come from that world, okay? So what I'm saying is that I know about that. Now, you're 50. Take a little time and learn. Okay, if they want to go into the music business, that's fine. Do you know about Pro Tools?
Not very much.
Okay, for those of you who don't know, there's a computer program called Pro Tools. That is the program that they use for most of your recording and mixing in music today, a program called Pro Tools. It's got plugins that synthesize a lot of the filters and compressors and things like that they use for traditional music. They used to take rack equipment. Now they just do it all on the computer. Hell, on a Mac. Now, you still need a console. Don't worry about her. You still need a console and whatnot, but my point is that take a look at what they do to get these things off the ground now. A one Mac can run Pro Tools. You'll need two hard drives. You don't want to save the information on the same computer that you're doing the recording on, so you're going to need two hard drives. You can get an external hard drive. That's fine. But my point about saying all that is that to look at the equipment that you need. Take a look at the equipment that you use. Take a look at what's available out there. Take a look at what we have access to. Why doesn't an older cat like you got some money to rub together. Why don't you sit here and instead of them having to go, I mean, take a look at Top Dog Entertainment. Why is it that you don't get together with somebody? He ain't got the money to get his studio together properly. Why don't you go ahead and spend some money, have the studio together properly? You can make money on both sides. You can actually stop complaining about the crap music that's out there, and you can actually get involved with making this music and making it better. Why not do that? Because I get lots of people who contact me talking about, I want to sing. I want to make a rap album. I want to sing. I want to make a rap album. Kendrick Lamar has made a bunch of money, but Top Dog Entertainment's made more money than Kendrick has. I wonder why.
Mm-hmm.
Top Dog Entertainment has made more money than Kendrick has because Top Dog Entertainment equipped. That's the difference. And as black people, we chase prestige. We chase status. We chase trinkets. You see, because we can wrap our minds around a gold chain. We can wrap our minds around a Maybach. We can wrap our minds around a Mercedes S-Class. We can wrap our minds around an Escalade. We have a lot more difficulty wrapping our minds around power, wealth, and influence. If you own the damn studio, it doesn't matter if rap music disappears. Tomorrow, you can bring in some white boys and have them record a rock album, a country album, a techno album, or whatever is on the horizon. Dr. Dre just made, well, he's in the process of possibly making $1 billion. Will somebody please tell me the last album that Dre put out? Most of Dre's money got eaten up by the record labels, Eazy-E, Death Row. Most of his money got eaten up by them. Dre has made more money since he got out of recording music than when he got into it. What's keeping you from doing that? I'm just one guy. I'm just one guy. I'm just one guy. So what I'm saying is that, brother, you could do the same thing. Them young folk ain't listening to you if they don't see you putting out any results. If all you can do is bring them ideology and you can't show them how to get something done, they don't want to hear you. They want to know how they can plug into a system. You have to bring them a system that they can plug into. Because white boys do not listen to their fathers because their fathers brought them ideology. White boys listen to their fathers because their fathers have businesses and have power, wealth, and influence. If he didn't have that, his sons wouldn't give a damn what he got to say. He would just be the old man talking out of fear. And black men have a horrible habit of bringing no assets and no abilities to our young people, expecting them to listen to us. And that's not going to cut it. People listen to Tariq Nasheed. They listen to Tariq Nasheed. And you know why the young people listen to Tariq? Because they can see what he's got. And they're looking at what he's got. And they're saying, you know what? I want to get it like that. And so Tariq has instant credibility because he's got it. Too many black men want to talk out their ass and sit up here and get listen to them. We got too much of that mess going on. Bring these young people some tangibles. Bring them some things they can see and can feel. And then you can start talking to them. But you can't talk to them with a bunch of ideology, brother. They ain't listening to that.
Mm-hmm. Not listening. Well, you know, I want to thank you for that advice. And, you know, you make a lot of sense. I mean, so scrap the ideology and show them some works. I got you. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I'm going to have to cut this call short, but, you know, I'm definitely going to contribute to your calls. And I admire you so much. And I want you to keep on doing what you're doing. And I'm going to, you know, everything that you told me, I've written down, and I'm going to try to make some things happen here in Los Angeles because I am a native. But I'm thinking about moving to Louisiana because my family, my mother's side of the family is from Louisiana. And, you know, black first, and again, Jason, thank you so much. I mean, some people think I'm an angry black man, but you made me a lot angry. I mean, I don't want you to take that to be in an offensive way, but I'm just so proud to hear someone in your generation. You say you're only 37 years old. I mean, man, you, boy, I am just proud of you, and I don't know you from nowhere because it's just so rare to meet and talk to a 37-year-old person who has did their homework. If you don't mind me asking, were you raised by your grandparents? You don't have to answer that question.
No, I mean, yes, but I had a whole family around me. So, like I said, I have had some social things that a lot of black people do not have, and I'm just trying to spread the word of how it happened for me. They were uncompromising.
Right, right.
My grandparents were uncompromising. My parents were uncompromising, and I'm giving it to y'all like it was given to me. And in Louisiana, you learn very early, at a very young age, that you're black. Very, very early. The interracialism thing never popped off here like it did in California and whatnot. So we were never able to fool ourselves as young black men that people were going to sit up here and kiss our asses like that. Never had that at all. So, like I say, it's just one of those things where at an early age, we have to grow up fast on that. We had to grow up fast on that because if you let your children go out there uninformed, get gobbled up. And I come from a family of business owners, but they had to become business owners because of segregation.
Right.
See, I was raised by people who white folk were trying to starve them to death. Let me say that one more time for those of you Negroes out there living in denial of reality. I was raised in the South by old black folk and younger black folk. And white folk made it very clear that they understood that if we lock you out of the economy, we can kill you. That we will make sure that we will use our system to make sure that you don't eat. We will make sure that you cannot eat. We will starve you out. And I'm not saying that figuratively. I mean, they had conversations about that. I mean, they knew that. I mean, it was deliberate. They understood if we deny them a job, they can't get a house. They can't get food. They can't get clothing. They can't do anything. So we will lock them out of the economy.
But, you know, I'll say one other thing, Jason, and if you got to cut me off, cut me off. I really do honestly believe that the tide is going to turn, and I really do honestly believe that the future generations coming, we are going to have more entrepreneurs. Because, I mean, really, to be quite honest with you, that's the only way you're going to be able to make it nowadays. I mean, in the future, a job is not going to cut it. And I really do think, I mean, I really think the tide is going to turn. And I'm not going to give up on black people. You know, the thing out here is people are pretty well much giving up on black people. Even black people didn't give up on black people. But I'm not giving up on black people. Because, see, you have to take a look at our history and our roots. We are really a very disciplined group of people, and we are really a group of people that is willing to make a sacrifice. And I really do believe in the future we are going to be more entrepreneurial than what generations were in the past. I just have a gut feeling. I'm not going to write us off.
Well, I don't have a gut feeling about it. I mean, I know it. I mean, I've always said it. But here's the real thing. The question is not, I've never questioned whether black people are going to survive. The question I've always had is how many of us?
Exactly.
Because the truth is that right now, at this moment in history, most of us are not fit and suited. Because most people are still looking to everybody who hates them for salvation.
Mm-hmm.
Most black people are looking to everyone who despises them for our salvation.
Mm-hmm.
And that is not going to work. We can't keep sitting up here bowing down to everyone who hates us and then telling ourselves that, oh, well, that's going to be a way out. Because understand something. What's happened is that we have got ever since slavery, there has been a contest, a competition, a struggle between two classes of black people. There are two classes of black people that have been at struggle since the first Europeans landed on African shores. The Africans who will bow and the Africans who will not. Now, did you notice I didn't say the black people? I said the Africans. This has been an African problem and still is to this day. There are Africans who refuse to bow, and there are Africans who refuse to stand. And that is what we're up against. The Africans who refuse to bow and the Africans who refuse to stand. And that is what the fight is today. And the people who have bowed consistently over the last 500 years, and particularly the last 150 years, those are the pawns and the shills and the lackeys and the agents of white supremacy. Those who indulge in all the things that are destructive to us, because white supremacy has embarked on an agenda and a mission of annihilating black society by poisoning us from the inside, by taking death culture and making that black culture. And everybody who embraces death culture, bastard babies, drug use, drive-by idiot culture, illiteracy, those are the people who have adopted that.
So now, kind of reading between the lines here, living in a culture like I live in here in L.A. with culture, multiculturalism. You're basically saying that, you know, I should not really be concerned about what, you know, these other ethnicities are doing. I should basically be just trying to tell our people about entrepreneurship and influence. Because the reason why I say that is because the thing here in L.A., with certain people, black people, I'm going to say, they're too busy, you know, really kind of looking at what the other ethnic groups are doing, and they're not paying attention to themselves.
Yeah, but here's the problem. The problem is we never took a look at why we were brought here in the first place. We have never actually taken a look at that to see. We never actually took a look at that to see. We never actually looked into that to see that, to see why it was that they brought us here.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, you know, me, myself, personally, I mean, it was cheap labor. I mean, you know, and they thrived off of it, and they're still thriving off of it today.
Yeah, but I mean, the point is not about cheap labor. We never actually asked ourselves, why did they bring us here? They brought us here because they're running a business.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, that's true. Well, you know, one of the things that I've been talking to some other black people out here, you know, about starting different businesses. I wanted to a multicultural supermarket that catered to all the ethnicities. And there's a few people that, you know, may go in with me and do it. And this is the point I'm trying to make. With, again, like I said, here in L.A. now, we have over 250 different cultures. Technically speaking, what's going on now, if we have a national disaster here in the city of Los Angeles, the Los Angeles city government is scared because they don't have enough EMS going out in different languages. So what I really want to try to do is I want to try to make money off these other ethnicities. I mean, I've lived here long enough. I know what they like to eat. I know what they like to drink. I know what they like to wear. And that's one of the things that I'm going to try to do, because just trying to open up a soul food restaurant to cater to black people, my people aren't going to support me, you know.
Well, I think the problem is that we as black people do not think like business owners. A business owner does not start with an agenda and make a business. A business owner decides on a business and uses that business to forward an agenda. You started all wrong with the multicultural thing. You do not start a business for the purposes of helping black people. A business is not a social organization. It is not a social service. A business is an enterprise for the purposes of acquiring power, wealth, and influence for you. And you use your power, wealth, and influence to benefit other people. So black people start all wrong. You do not start a business as a social enterprise. You start a business as an economic enterprise. That's its sole purpose for existing, economics. You don't start off with here's the ethnic agenda of it. If you want to start a store that caters to multi-ethnics, I don't have a problem with that, but I would want to know where the model is that proves that kind of thing is successful. If you can't find it, maybe you're barking up the wrong tree. That's the kind of question that as a business person you should ask yourself. We as black folks do not do that enough. A business is not the purpose of a business. Rich people can help a lot of people and they can hurt a lot of folk. But a business is not intended to save the world. A business is intended to provide power, wealth, and influence for the people who started that business. Now, businesses provide goods and services, and hopefully that is what benefits people.
Mm-hmm.
How well you run your business is what benefits people. But at the same time, you do not start a business to benefit people. You start a business to benefit yourself. And once you are benefited, then you can move on to other people. You do not start a business for the purposes of helping folk in the neighborhood. You started by helping yourself. And so when you said a multi-ethnic grocery store, the first thing I thought was, well, how many non-black people does this man know who would be willing to spend money with him on a venture like this?
A lot of them.
Okay, well, maybe that's something. Maybe you need to be talking to them then.
Right.
Shouldn't be talking to me. You need to be talking to them. and run your idea by them and see what they think. Since that's going to be part of your customer base, you need to become intimately familiar with them. Right. Most of your, as I've pointed out many times to y'all before, most of your black music, well, practically all of your black music, all your black porn, your black movies, those are produced by what? White folk. They just got a few black faces out front, but that's produced by white people. Especially where porn is concerned, they choose black women who look nothing like the white women that they themselves would date. The guys who are paying for the black porn movies, they're white men, but they wouldn't date a white female who had that much meat on her. But that's not that he knows his customer base. His customer base likes a different body type. He wouldn't dare go for it. But he knows his customer base, and you need to know yours just as intimately. You need to know them just as well.
Well, you know, I want to thank you so much for that advice, and I'm going to definitely try to put it into effect. And I'm going to have to let you go, but I do definitely want to say, Black First, I've contributed to 7 a.m., and I'm trying to get as many people as I can out here in Los Angeles to try to follow you. And, you know, young man, keep up the good work.
Well, thank you very much for joining us, and do contribute again. We still have a couple more weeks left, so definitely we've broken a lot of barriers in the last 2 weeks. It's been tremendous, but let's get this thing into the stratosphere. People, imagine what we could do with 100,000. Imagine what you can, how you'll feel seeing 7 a.m. on television in Los Angeles there. Just think about the possibilities, because that's the kind of thing that really can help boost a lot of support. Thank you very much for checking in with us. Please call us again. I'm going to see if I can try to get Gwen on here is what I'm going to try to do. I'll see if I can try to get her back because she dropped a little while ago here. I'm going to see if I can try to patch her back in again, though. Let's see if we can check on that. Are you there, Gwen? Hello, Gwen. Are you there? Okay, Gwen, you need to be listening on your, you're listening over your speakers. You don't need to do that.
Let me turn it off.
Okay. This is the caliber of
people you are
with here, folks. She's listening through her speakers. Now, she's supposed to be on the phone, but she's listening to her speakers. Okay. Sounds like she's heading to a wind tunnel.
To a wind tunnel?
Yeah.
Oh, I have my headphones plugged in my tablet.
Okay, well, it sounded like you were next to a fan or something, so there's a lot of roaring going on. Come on, Gwen, let's get it together.
Well, let me try to move. I'm usually better, okay?
Okay.
Let me see. I know.
And what are we going to do with you?
I'm on my own time.
Gwen is like our little haphazard buddy, you know? It's like Laverne and Shirley with their two friends who... at the beginning of the thing, bite themselves and stuff like that. It's just, I don't know what we're going to do with Gwen, y'all.
Well, can you call my cell phone?
It's like SpongeBob and Patrick. So,
which one am I?
I'm SpongeBob. I'm SpongeBob.
Is it any better?
It's better. Yeah, it's better. I mean, it was better a few seconds after you started moving, so you're fine like you are right now.
Okay.
Now, Gwen, what did you need to talk to me about?
Well, I just didn't. I saw a post earlier today on your page, and it was about a stripper and a white man, and he was suing her. And I didn't understand, I guess, your total reference to, you referenced Scandal. I believe, I'm not looking at it right now, but you said it was similar to Scandal has something in common with Scandal. So I didn't understand quite where you were coming from, or a lot of other people, other than being a black woman and a white man.
Okay. Well, what it is there is, for those of you who did not see it, I posted this story up earlier today. Actually, I posted it up this morning. And it is a story, is linked to a television station, actually, there. And what it is there is a stripper who's being sued. It's only $1,000, so I mean it's not Bernie Madoff, y'all. But it is there's a stripper in Houston. Houston, y'all. Houston. She's a 32-year-old stripper in Houston. She's a black female, and she's being sued by this white man who is claiming that basically he loaned her a couple of thousand dollars and he wants his money back and some DVDs and a laptop, I think it was. Sounds pretty petty, doesn't it? But my point in saying all that is that this guy claims that they were dating. Now, first of all, technically speaking, that's supposed to blow up in his face once he says they're dating. Once he says that he's dating a stripper, really that's supposed to blow up in his face as far as I loaned her money. If he doesn't have a promissory note or something, you know, a gift is a gift. You can't claim that what you give somebody is not a gift just because they stopped dating you. I mean, if she got you the trick off, she got you the trick off. But my point about all that is that, did people recognize the dynamic there? Did you recognize that dynamic? Now, she's a black female. She's in pretty good shape. You know, she doesn't look like they've rolled the wheels off of her, although we weren't able to inspect stretch marks, but we're going to assume that's not the case. But she's built the way white men like that kind of thing. She's got the colored hair and stuff like that and looks like the weave extensions in her hair. Bone straight. All the way, bone straight. Okay, she's got this white dude who's been tricking off on her. She got the V-stiff kind of action going. All right. She found her little low-rent Donald Sterling. You know, a couple of $1,000. So that means he paid her rent or her car note or whatever. That's fine. She got him to trick off on her. Here's the issue that I have with it, though. The issue that I have with it is too many black women can see that kind of dynamic to be a badge of honor. And it's kind of interesting to me that you did not recognize that dynamic, that so much so to the point that you were questioning it. Rat Scandal is no longer just a TV show. Scandal is a metaphor. It is a metaphor for black women who bow at the altar of white supremacy. That is what Scandal is. That's what Scandal is. And when you see something like this, I mean, she was just all too happy to sit there and cheese about it. She's treating it like it's a big joke. I would never have spoken to the media about something like that. Now, the white guy, I wouldn't have spoken to the media, but if it was her, I wouldn't have said anything to them. I wouldn't have said anything at all. She was all too happy to sit there and do that. That was the problem that I had with that. This is a dynamic that I have an issue with. Black women who think it's cute and it's funny and it's a badge of honor to state to the world how many white men they've been tricking for them. V. Stiviana did that because she wanted you all to know that she had some rich white dudes tricking for her. Eve is out there doing that because she wants you to know she's got a white dude, even if he ain't got nothing, tricking off on her. Halle Berry wanted to let you know that she gets white men tricking off on her, even if she's got more money than them. This is how crazy it's gotten. That they have taken this attention-whoring thing to these hideous extremes. That was the issue that I had with it. That was the scandal dynamic. And I'm curious as to how it is that you were questioning that and you didn't see that.
Well, you know, I understand what you're saying, and I'm not sure why it sounded or why I came across like I was questioning that, because I didn't know that that's what you thought until now. But I did write in my response, one of my responses, that she shouldn't even, I agreed with you, that I don't know why she would even, if she was a half-decent person or even a half-decent stripper, she wouldn't be on, you know, on the news like the way she was. She seemed happy to be on the news, just like you said, yeah.
Okay, everybody, Gwen has some issues, and we're going to try to look past Gwen's issues tonight. Now, Gwen just said, I was questioning it. I don't know why you would question it. Why would you think I was questioning it? To which I say, these are Gwen's exact words in the first response that she gave everybody. You tell me if it sounds like she was questioning it. Mappa said, Houston man sues stripper. Take a look at this video and tell me if this reminds you of scandal. To which Gwen's response, I'm quoting you now because I'm reading it, Gwen. See, it sounds like you're questioning anything because she just told us all she wasn't. Her response, quote, this has nothing to do with scandal other than it being a black woman and a white man. Now, did I take that sentence out of context? Oh, wait a minute. I couldn't have taken it out of context because I was quoting you. So everybody heard what you said the way I did. Now, if they all agree with me, you weren't taken out of context. You just said, how can you say I was questioning it? Because you said this, I said, tell me if this reminds you of scandal, and you said, quote, this has nothing to do with scandal. That's why.
Well, what I meant by questioning it, I wasn't questioning
okay,
well, what you just
all
put.
About what you meant by this has nothing to do with scandal. Let's try going to that.
Well, I did not question what you put forth. I didn't know that that's where you were coming from. I didn't see that as being the dynamic. I would have made a different connection to scandal. You know, like you said, how, you know, I agree with what you said, but the tricking for money part is what I understand, but I just didn't see that in, I don't see that in a scandal, the tricking for money part. But how it...
You don't see where a black female is catering to a white man at the expense of black people, and particularly black men, to benefit herself in a avaricious, selfish, shallow attempt at whoring herself out for her own personal benefit. You don't see that? Because the whole series is based upon that. Olivia Pope's character has even admitted to that on the show. Everybody knows that, and yet you're telling us that I don't see that.
Jason, that's not what I'm saying or what I said at all. You know, I've made several posts about scandal.
You just sat here and said, I don't
okay.
see the tricking right. part of scandal. You just said that.
I said tricking for money.
Okay, what is money?
Money is what you described the stripper as getting as cash or gifts and things
okay.
like that.
Well, what I'm saying is that if she's doing this because it's for her own personal benefit by working for the president, that is what is being Olivia Pope status. And it is her status that allows her to charge the fees she does to other clients. That's the sole reason that everybody wants to say that they work for the president of the United States. Because once you have that on your resume, what does that say? And the longer you can stay there, the better you are. George Stephanopoulos has been allowed to stay at ABC long enough that, you know, NBC, he knocked off NBC as far as ratings. He was allowed to, and hosting This Week. Even though what did he do before going on television? He worked for Bill Clinton's White House. He had never worked in television before. But the fact that he was able to say that he worked at Bill Clinton's White House, that he was one of Bill Clinton's very, very closest people. He used that to get the career that he's got now. And you're sitting here telling, understand, everybody can hear you now, Gwen. You are telling everybody that you don't see that happening as far as you didn't recognize that on Scandal, the exact same thing, and you're saying that you don't recognize it. Exact same dynamic, but you don't recognize it.
I do not recognize what, about Olivia Pope doing the things that you were saying the stripper was doing, but what you say now, I do recognize.
I mean,
it's just
that she's doing it on a whole different level.
I understand
that. The stripper is doing it for a couple $1,000s was what she did it for, and Olivia Pope has got her eyes on millions, not thousands. She's got her eyes on millions. The only difference between their two hustles is that Olivia Pope is trying to pull off a whole new level of hustle. And she is not above selling her soul, or at least in her case, leasing it out. She is not above doing that. If that man were anybody other than the President of the United States, she would not be doing it. That's the point. It's not that she is in love with this man. It is that she sees an opportunity to become a part of that, and that is what she is in love with. So that is how that white man is taking advantage of it. He's got power, wealth, and influence. If not wealth, he's definitely got power and influence and control of the nation's wealth. So off he goes. So that's the only difference between their two hustles. There is only a degree's worth of difference between that stripper and Olivia Pope. And to be totally honest with you, it's not even a degree. It's just a shade of difference. Just a shade. A bunch of black females out there. A lot of black females are angling to be that stripper in Houston. Can we just be honest about that? They are angling to replicate that. That's why Scandal is so popular. How can I exert power over a white man? How can I get a white man to do these things for me? So whether it's the stripper in Houston, the checkout girl at Walmart, the manager at your call center, we can go down the list. The chick who called in last night, the desk clerk from the hotel, or Olivia Pope, or some B-list chick from California named Stiviano, who lucked up on some senile millionaire. It's all the same game, and it's all the exact same agenda. All the mechanics are identical. There is no difference between them. But you're saying that you saw that, and you didn't recognize that issue there. When was the last time that you saw a black stripper being sued, and it was a black man, and she was sitting up there talking like that? Oh, I'm sorry. You haven't seen it. And she's far from the only one with a dynamic like that going on. My thing is, why in the world would she go on television to talk about that? Because she thinks that she's got some little status from being able to say that. That's why. She thinks she gets some kind of shine from being able to say that. And there are enough females out there like yourself who are willing to overlook that. Now, had that been a black man and a white woman was suing him, you would have immediately talked about jungle fever. You'd have been right. If I had said jungle fever, you'd have been right on top of that. But it was a black female, so all of a sudden you're colorblind. All of a sudden you can't see this. Oh, my selective blindness done kicked in again. But if it was a black male, you never would have missed that. Hell, you probably would have brought it to me and told me about that. Had it been a black male, you would have recognized it. We got problems out there, y'all. We got real problems out there.
Yeah. Well, you know, of course, you know, I don't agree with that. My comment was, I set the woman in a place that I believe that she was in. If you want to just read the first comment that it has nothing to do with Scandal, I ask you, help me understand but you want to, you know, drag me, you know, through all this, and I'm this, I'm that, and I don't get
this
it.
This has nothing to do with
the
scandal other than it being a black woman with a white man. The stripper girl looks like a sick man, and the white man looks like a creepy basement killer. The black thing is sick in her mind and has resorted. Okay, that sentence isn't a whole lot of sense. The black thing is sick in her mind and has resorted to sex with crazy men to get what she wants. White men have been doing this with black women and black men forever. She is lucky she is not dead. Men have killed for less. This is not the type of black woman anyone should be interested in saving. She has no qualities worth passing on. It would actually be better to cut our losses and give her away. Sadly, these are the women that thousands of men in Maryland leave their wives, families, girlfriends, and so on to watch at night and spend their money on. It's a shame that this woman, or whatever she is not even attractive. Yet I'm sure she makes a lot of money because she is a fake. She is as fake as possible, and they are the ones that get the dough. D-O-C. Okay, I hope that's the spell check. I hope the man loses his case because he doesn't seem to know how strippers go about their business. This is a scandal in its own right because he has filed a suit against the woman for acting scandalous. I am happy that the man is not black, I guess. Leave these women to burn. Don't ask questions. They are too far gone. Even if she has a decent person, she wouldn't have shown her face on the news. Shun these women and the men who fall prey to such carnage. Disgusting. To which I responded, Gwendolyn, you have totally missed the point. Just wow. To which you responded, okay, Jason Black, as someone who doesn't watch Scandal, can you tell me what your point was? So not once but twice, you didn't get it. And that was why I said, apparently this requires explanation. You can call us up tonight. So, before anybody says that I tried to mischaracterize what happened, I just read for you all verbatim in entirety what Gwendolyn said. Now, if anybody thinks that what I just read changed the essence of what I said, then definitely you can call us out on it. You can get in the chat room and say, okay, Jason, you just mischaracterized what she said. It changes. Now that I've heard all of that, that totally changes what you're saying that she meant. You can get in the chat room and say, I'll load another broadcast because Blog Talk is done for the first one, but I'll load up another one just so you can call in and I can take your call. I'll load up another one.
Well, what did I mean then? You're saying mischaracterize what I said. What is it that I meant? I didn't mean it. I did not get your connection with it.
Yes, that's
so I asked you.
Well, that's my point is that everybody else got it.
Okay, Jason.
Okay, it's not
all right.
Like I was just
okay. Everybody else got it.
It's not like I was talking to the stars. Everybody else got it except Gwendolyn. Everybody else understood the scandal connection except Gwendolyn.
Okay.
I would not have posted this otherwise. If it was just a case of a stripper being sued, I just would have overlooked it completely. But then once I saw the dynamic that was playing out there and attitude and the way she was acting and this whole fiasco of getting on the news, that was when I said, wait a minute, there's another side to this. There's another dynamic playing out here. And I wonder if people are witnessing this. I wonder if they notice it. Because we just finished talking about V. Stiviana for the last 2 weeks. Did anybody just notice the exact same thing happen here? And what I'm saying is that even when it was laid out in front of you, everybody has made the connection between Scandal and V. Stiviana. There is less ambiguity between this and V. Stiviana. And you're saying this has nothing to do with Scandal.
Jason, my opinion is that you can connect a lot of things with Scandal, whether a woman, regardless of what a woman is doing. I did not see the connection other than a black man or a black woman and a white man.
Okay.
You know,
that's
but you explained it to me.
Saying that. You keep saying
and,
it's a black
you know,
woman and a white man. And there's so much more to it than just that. It was maybe you did not actually watch the video, but they explained to you what it was.
I watched the video.
Did you take a look at where she lives?
Was it in the background?
This is not easy, y'all. Being TBA is not easy. When I did the video about Michelle Rowling, the young woman who had told people she was scared of her boyfriend and was scared she was going to die on the internet, and a couple of days later, that's exactly what occurred. When I did that video, nobody looked into the issue like I did. Nobody did the investigation into it like I did. They talked about her, but they did not do a video where they went in-depth to take a look at that woman's life. When I did the video about Jaleesa Martin, nobody went in-depth to say, wait a minute, there's more. Let's find out if there's more going on here. Because what caught me about Jaleesa Martin was I saw the background behind her, and I was like, wait a minute, this looks like she lives in a housing project. And sure enough, when I looked into it, we found that she lived in a housing project. Got three babies and can get an attorney for a court fight, but she cannot get her children out of the housing projects. She's got enough money to get an attorney so she can fight her baby daddy over the child's name, but she cannot get enough money to move her children to a decent housing situation. Fast forward, Michelle Rowling. White folk have given her enough money to get on Facebook and put up all manner of nonsense, to get on Twitter and put up all manner of idiocy. She can crank out babies by every deadbeat goon and degenerate she prefers to wrap her... In her case, it's like, I don't get turned on by guys who are not deadbeats. So, unless you're a deadbeat, I can't really get with you. That was her attitude toward the world. That was what she said to the world. And when I looked into her and did some investigating into it, I put up the pictures of her apartment at the housing project where she was killed. The case of Michelle Rowling is the case of a hood rat being murdered at a housing project. How many people would have cared? And I'm not beating up on the dead, everybody. That's not what I'm doing. Don't misunderstand me. I'm not doing that. What I'm saying, though, is that, let me rephrase what I just said there, because I don't want people to get sidetracked by it. Not saying it's inaccurate. I do not want you to get sidetracked by me offending you. But I'm going to give it to you straight, no chaser. If the headline had said, single mother of two in housing project murdered by boyfriend, how many people would have cared about that? How many people would have cared about that Facebook posting if the headline had said single mother of two in a housing project, single mother of two murdered by boyfriend in housing project? How many people would have even noticed? How many? I'm asking you, Gwen.
Probably not many people would care.
Would TV1 have made that front page news on their website if they had made the headline single mother of two killed by boyfriend in housing project? If that had been the headline, nobody would be talking about Michelle Rowling at all. That's my point. And I got that from taking a look at the whole story. Gwen, you, everybody out there, understand, I don't ever post up anything without thinking about it from as many different degrees and angles as I can. I don't post up anything because it looks cute. Post up things because there is a multi-dimensional aspect to it and that I see something there. And in the case of this young woman from Houston, in the case of her, when I see her walking with the reporter, I can see where she lives. I can see litter on the ground. It doesn't look like this stripper lives at an upscale. It's an apartment complex, obviously. And it don't look like an upscale one. Now, I don't know if she lives in the housing projects. I don't know. But I'm taking a look at those apartments that they're at, and it doesn't look like an upscale place. Maybe it is, and we just caught them on a bad day. Maybe it is. But I took a look at her surroundings. And when a black woman goes in Houston, in a black city like Houston, goes out of her way to cater and jockey for white male attention like that, you can see that dynamic. You can see that dynamic. And the metaphor of scandal is ironclad at that point. You can see the dynamic. Take a look at where she lives and how she lives. You take a look at what she's willing to do. And when the guy says that he dated her, do you understand what that means? Do you understand why he said that?
I can guess.
Why?
It seems to me that he used her as a prostitute, I guess, or he's trying to make the relationship a little more...
Yes,
you have to be coy about
it. You have to understand something here. And Gwen, I'm not beating up on you here. When I have a black female who's on the phone and they say things like, well, she's a stripper, but I don't know if she's a man or not, y'all have to stop that hating. Y'all really have to stop that. If you don't have any proof,
she looks
if
like
you don't
a man.
Have, okay, I took a look at her. It doesn't look like a man to me.
A few people said she looked like a
no,
man.
No, just people who don't like strippers.
Yeah, well, that's me.
Okay, but yeah, most females do not like strippers because they do things y'all wish y'all could do. Y'all wish y'all could get male attention popping like that. But
now it's a good thing to be a stripper.
What I'm saying is that if you hate somebody, hate them for the right reasons. That petty jealousy childhood sophomore.
Okay, Jason, please. She looks like a man, okay?
That
so
count.
That's it.
That doesn't count.
If you're attracted
that
to that
count.
Or other men.
I didn't say attracted to it. Roseanne Barr is not a man. Rosie O'Donnell is not a man.
No.
Okay, so what I'm saying is that calling her a man, that's a cheap tactic that females who cannot get as much attention as somebody else use in order to try to bring somebody down. And that works in high schools. I'm saying for adults, we're supposed to be above that kind of thing. We're not supposed to do that. We're supposed to be above that.
Name calling?
No, what I'm saying is that you're supposed to be, if you have an issue with somebody, you're supposed to take issue with what they've done. Bringing that up does not even reference the point. And she looks like a man, okay, and that has what to do with the story at all. That has what to do with the problem at all. Why would you do that? You do that. This is how females, that's that thing about the shaming tactics and whatnot. It's like the fat girls. Whenever I put up the pictures of fit females, the fat girls jump out of nowhere and say, nobody wants a bone. She looks manly. She looks masculine. She looks manly. No, heifer, she looks fit. That's been called muscle tone. And the only muscle tone that most of these females got are in their jaws when they're eating a pack of hoes and some Eskimo pies. That's the only jaw. That's the only musculature they got. So I when I see that kind of thing, it's like, as a guy, I don't have to attack another man and say he looks sissified. That's not the issue that's at stake. Now, if he says something stupid, I'm going to say, well, there's a lack of intelligence. If he sounds like a dope addict, I'm going to say he talks like he's been doing mollies. But guess what? Because I can show you that the problem is that this guy on my phone don't sound very bright. He sounds really slow. And I think there's a reason for him sounding slow. You cannot connect she looks like a man to anything other than I'm Gwen, and I don't think I can be a stripper. She looks like a man. Strippers are bad. Okay, it wouldn't matter if she looked like that or if she looked like Nicki Minaj or if she like Beyonce.
Okay.
Being a stripper is not what makes her being reprehensible. I mean, that's a whole different issue about being a stripper. Because if it was Beyonce, you would be saying she looks like a man, too.
She looked like a man, okay? I don't understand what you
it.
Saw. No,
yeah,
I would not.
Beyonce
doesn't look like a man.
Same.
No, they don't look like men.
If it was Beyonce or Nicki Minaj, you would say the same thing. And what I'm saying
that's not true. She looked like a man, Jason.
Okay, we cloudy discussions when we get sidetracked like that.
Okay.
The point is that in her case, if you take a look at things from as many degrees as possible, you realize that there's a bigger issue going on here. Take a look at her surroundings. Take a look at her job. Now, I immediately caught the fact that he said that they were dating. Now, most people out there with the jealousy and the green envy in their eyes don't understand that, wait a minute, there's a reason why he keeps harping on that. He keeps coming back to that. Why does he keep doing that? He keeps doing that because he wants you to understand that they had a sexual relationship. That's when he's trying to get drilled through that skull. He wants you to understand that so that you can see that if he's putting that much credence on it, she did too. If it's that important to him to make that distinction, that means that she made it important to make that distinction to him. If it's that important to him to make that distinction to us, she made sure to make that distinction to him, that I'm not just a stripper with you.
Yeah, that's what strippers do, though, you know?
Well, in this case, what I'm saying is that he fell for the bait on that, but be that as it may, he is trying to say that, no, this is not a stripper relationship here. That's the point that he was trying to make. And that is a crucial point to understand, because that is the understanding that he had with her. And if he had that understanding with her, I assure you that he substantiated. Now, technically speaking, that should actually deep six his court case. Technically speaking, that should absolutely sink it.
What, proving that they were more than, that they were dating?
Speaking, that will just sink your, I already explained that, Gwen. Thank you very much for listening so closely.
I've been listening, but why would prove that they were, because you're saying dating, you could go back and request or act as if it was a loan or if it wasn't a gift?
I can see that light bulb over her head just flicking, y'all. It's struggling, but it's trying to get there.
It's on.
Yes.
It's one of those energy-saving ones.
If you watch any of these court TV programs, People's Court, Judge Judy, or whatever, once she is your girlfriend, the law already speaks about what is a gift and what is a loan. The law already speaks on that. And it is going to be, the burden of proof is going to be on you to prove that this was a loan and not a gift. So in a situation like that, where you're dating somebody, if it is